Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So,
I am.
update numbers real quick. I know Alex just gave them, but $3,605. But on that, I'm going to go ahead and turn the segment over right away.
Awesome.
Right. Good luck.
Thanks. So this is a segment where people can call in if you want, add Don on Skype. His Skype username is Don, DAAN, live, all one word. And you'll be able to pitch an idea, and we'll have a back and forth and discuss game design. Have a general idea when you get in. I can help bounce stuff around. And we have someone in right now for the first person, but there's going to be a little bit of housekeeping first. There is an hourly email. Contest. Email contest at nintendoworldreport.com with the keyword design, DESIGN, sometime this hour to be eligible for prizes. And we are just about to get started. And hi, Freestar.
Hi.
Hi. Is that what I should call you?
Yes, that'd be fine.
Okay. So tell me about your game idea.
This is something that I've been always been thinking of in the back of my mind. So it is a turn-based RPG, with like fighting game combo elements. Like an example that I can give. Hold on, someone's. Sorry, I gotta be quieter. An example that I can give is sorry, I'm being told to be quieter. I apologize.
It's okay.
So, like Killer Instinct has the opener, linker, ender. I was thinking of something like that, but for an RPG, not like Cross Zone where it's do the same three, four inputs over and over again. And like have a bit of slowdown between each character, so it's like, okay, you can plan out and go, okay, I want this character to end the combo, I want this character to continue the combo, something like that.
Okay, so what kind of scale were you thinking of this? Were you thinking like grid-based? Were you thinking overworld, open world?
Probably. When you say overworld, you mean like go place to place?
Think like Dragon Quest Overworld.
Yeah, probably something similar to that.
Okay. So the first concern that j jumps out at me is when you're talking about different characters, would you be specializing one character in as being an opener character?
Well, like
Or
some characters would be better at opening up a combo. Some characters would be better at sending the enemy up higher to continue the combo, or farther back to. Because what I was also thinking of having like a range thing, where like with the Suikoden games, where there's long, medium, or short, medium, long, where certain moves will only hit farther away or do better farther away than
Okay.
others.
So, what would happen? So, if it's just better than if, for instance, all of your opener characters get knocked out, you can still have someone to open a combo?
You can, but you can also just do like normal, like you don't have to do a combo. You can still do like
Oh, okay.
big, yeah, because that's yeah, like supers or you don't have to do.
So one of you brought up the Project Cross Zone comparison, which I think is apt. The biggest problem with the Cross Zone games is they're extraordinarily overly long.
Right,
What would you
I played through a bit of Namco Cross Capcom, and I got bored of it for exactly that reason.
Yeah, so what would be your sort of solution, or what would be an early design plan that you would have around keeping a tight experience so that once players know how they want, like what combos they want to use, the game doesn't immediately become stale.
So I've been thinking I could do that in a bit of ways, thinking back to the fighting game thing. I could have it to be that certain moves, if you use them over and over again, do less damage. I could have it like Killer Instinct does it, which is you can only do a certain amount of damage, and then the combo just stops. Or I could have it be like the enemy can, like with Killer Instinct, break the combo or counter the or counter from the something from the start if they know what it's going to be.
I
I know that's a
think.
bit difficult with AI, but
I think if it could be managed, the combo breaking and sort of real-time opposition would be the most satisfying as a player. Can I have you hold for 1 second, John Lindemann?
Hey, Siren, this is I'm on this, right?
No.
This just started, right? I'm on this.
You're earlier than you were for your segment.
I would not be late for a segment twice. I'm pretty sure I'm on this. Let me just check the schedule. Just check, scroll down here.
Oh no.
That's good.
Sorry
All
about
right.
this restart, just a second.
All right. Hold. All right, this is kind of awkward, but yeah, I feel like I've
Bye.
made a mistake. All right. All right. Bye.
Your segment is at 10.
Okay. All right. All right. Sorry,
John, what are you
guys.
doing?
I'm
Get
out.
out of here.
Guys,
I didn't approve
James.
this.
James, I'm sorry. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm out.
Bye. Sorry about that freestart.
He got out. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it happens all the time. I'm sure it happens often listening to the podcast.
Not if we can avoid it.
You're not
Anyway.
wrong. Editing happens for a reason. As you were saying, like breaking a combo would keep it fresh because you'd actually have to pay attention while executing the attack. How would you treat player progression outside of stats? Would you gain new attacks, or would you gain new combo parts? How would you best let the player feel like they are making meaningful progression?
Probably, maybe a bit of combo, a bit of option A and a bit of option B. Like certain, like over time, your character will go, okay, I can actually link this into this, as opposed to like A into C as opposed to A into B, and that'll do like something completely different. And then you'll also get new moves and. I want, like, I'm going back to the super thing. I'd like something similar to like limit breaks or supers, where there is a big thing that you can end with, and those could change over time, like gaining certain stat, like gaining, oh, now this paralyzes sometimes, or now you can charge it up, or now it opens a combo.
Have you played Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE?
No, I have not, but I do. I know this is kind of related, but I am a big Persona player, and I was just actually playing Golden.
Good choice. But what I was thinking of is in Sharp FE, as you gain new weapons, the weapons, as you level up those weapons, will in turn teach you skills that your character can retain. And I was wondering if that kind of ability progression would work well with this.
I like that idea, but I don't know, like, I haven't been thinking about, oh, what weapons would each character use, but yeah.
No, I really do like this idea. I think it has a lot of merit. I'm worried, especially with AI, about development time and cost.
Yeah, that's the big
But
thing, is,
as
like, I've read, like, oh, like creating a smart AI can be very difficult.
very difficult.
Yeah, without having it be cheap. Just.
Yeah, no, that I really do like it. Those are my concerns. My largest concern is in AI handling. But then you also have some really good design framework around this, and it's clear that you've been thinking about this a long time, and I can say I'm a big fan of this idea. Just my only suggestion, if you ever decide to pursue it, is to keep your expectations of budget and time realistic.
Right.
And I think that could be a really great game.
Thank you. I'm glad that I could hear someone more professional than I am give or help or think of. Sorry, I'm nervous.
It's okay.
I'm glad that I could get someone more professional than I am, have me bounce my ideas off of them and hear their opinion.
Yeah, of course. That's what this is for. So can you contact Carmine in chat, number one We Cheer fan, and tell him that you can have a prize?
All right.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Have a good
Thank you
day.
for listening. Okay, bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And coming up next, we have Nut. Hello?
Oh, hello. Sorry, give me one second.
So, what does chat have to say about that last idea? Chat currently is talking a lot of crap about John Lindemann.
As expected. All right, I'm ready when you are.
Awesome. Chat, go ahead and let me know what you thought of that last idea. Right now, I'm going to be listening to Nut's pitch. Okay. Go right ahead. Oh. Oh.
Oh,
We're
sorry.
live.
Okay.
It's okay. Start
All
whenever
right.
you're ready.
All right. So my idea is, have you played Bit Trip Runner or Harmonite? All
Yep, both.
right. So you know how you can collect notes in Harmonite, and they make a noise every single time you pick them up?
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking of an endless runner where
Well pointed.
Endless rhythm runner where the pathways of the level splits can split, and then depending on which pathway you choose, you can get different music. For example, like maybe if you pick the higher path, you might get a violin solo, versus if you pick a lower path, you might get a saxophone solo, or the melody might change slightly, or maybe like there's two different endings to the song. It was different types of mood.
Awesome. Counter question. Have you seen anything about the Xbox One Kinect game Fantasia Music Evolved?
No, actually.
So that's a game that Rock Band developer Harmonix put out back right after the Kinect lost relevance. Terrible timing on their part, but it had this really cool idea where they had pop songs and classical songs, so like Sorcerer's Apprentice, and they recorded the whole song in a neutral style, and then a rock style, and then a pop style, and then a jazz style. And as you played through the song, you could just seamlessly switch between them. This is giving me really good vibes from that. So my first big concern is you said Endless Runner and then song. So when you say Endless Runner, is that actually just shorthand because that's what we call the genre? Do you actually mean stages that have endings, so songs that have endings? Or
Yeah,
it's
I
a composition
mean,
that goes on forever?
yeah, I meant the that because we call the genre that way, just like I'm thinking of basically like, like a bit trip kind of game, and
I really like that.
actually I kind of made a concept kind of like I just like the idea so much, and like I've made like I'm not an artist or anything, but I made kind of concept art kind of
Awesome.
and because like I'm thinking of making the world like Box Boy,
Yes.
kind of with that like sort of minimalist black and white style, and maybe like as you play the game, as you get notes, it becomes more colorful. But that kind of minimalist style and having the designs of the characters be strongly based off instruments, or maybe like changing the clefs to become the like clefs in music to become like weapons. Like for example, a treble clef could be a sword or a gun or a gun sword. And you know what an alto clef looks like?
Yeah.
All right. So the little curvy three part, I've always thought of it as kind of like a bow. You can have like an arrow. You can like have some either arching mini game or maybe like the archer level sort of similar to Harmonite. Maybe I don't know, I'd probably tweak it to, because I didn't really like those that much, but.
So were you thinking a strictly 2D art style, whereas I would call Harmonite a 2.5D?
Yeah, I'm thinking, pretty much like 2D and yeah, like as you play the game, maybe it gets more colorful, because I know like a complaint about Box Boy is that the style kind of just gets a little like, kind of hurts the eyes a little bit, because it's like the same thing over and over and over, like the same colors and everything. It's very monotonous. There we go.
So, yeah. No, I really like this idea. I also think it has a lot of merit. My biggest concern with this is trying to find a wide enough variety of music that can have the same sort of backing, but can sound different with different melody notes. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, kind of. So, yeah. Well,
if you go up and it's like a violin, and you go forward and it's say a trumpet, trying to find one song that works equally well with both of them.
Yeah, I can kind of see that being an issue.
It's not insurmountable. It's not impossible. Solving it would make it a way better game, really memorable, but you would have to have you or someone else on the team would have to be really good at like music theory to come up with what it's going to be before you get into prototyping it.
Yeah, I'm not exactly certain on the style I want to go for yet, because I kind of really. I either want sort of an electronic style or maybe like a variety of styles, and they kind of like join. Like I was thinking maybe you could have like a world with with orchestrated music and another world that's mostly trumpets and saxophones and maybe a world of electronic, and maybe the last world is some sort of combination. And just like, yeah.
So,
go ahead, sorry.
Okay, sort of final two questions that I have burning in my head are, what's your idea for the scope of this game, as in number of levels or number of hours, if you want to count it that way? Because the thing with rhythm games is that each level does take a long time to make.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of a very long game, because I was thinking that some people may want to replay the levels, because just to hear all the music changes, or to get all the notes maybe and like get the best ending or something like that. But maybe like four worlds that end like, and it would in total take about maybe 10 or 15 hours to complete.
Okay.
And that's like including like failing and stuff. Maybe a little less if it's depending on the scale.
And then my final question is, have you thought of a collectible that is hard to attain, but once you attain it, unlock something like concept art or sound gallery?
Maybe there could be like a note that is like especially like. I'm trying to think of an example. For some reason, the only thing that comes up in my mind right now is in Project Diva, the Hatsune Miku rhythm games.
Yep.
The little stars. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Like maybe those, like if you collect those, maybe you can unlock these levels, because I've always had this idea, because of there's like a criticism of Sonic games that if you like, they're really good, but every time the momentum breaks, it just kind of like, it just doesn't feel good to like stop the momentum. And I would think a solution to that is to maybe make really fast rhythm stages that, because you're running, it looks like you're going like really fast, and then you get that momentum of a Sonic game without like, and maybe the music can go faster and faster and faster, like maybe start out slow. And yeah, and I think that would be a good way to solve that. And hey, maybe I would actually like a Sonic game. Maybe I can make a good Sonic game. There we go.
Maybe. I'm going to have to let you go because we do have a line, but I just want to say I really like this idea a lot. I play music and I've been a musician for most of my entire life. And if this could, if your idea could be realized in a really efficient and compact way, that would be absolutely fantastic. I think that if you have people who know what the target design is, and you have someone who's a composer who's really well-versed in music theory, I think that you could get away with a fairly small team on this one. I think it's a great idea.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Be sure to stop by Carmine because you get a prize.
All righty. Have a... Raise some more money for the children, folks.
Yes.
For the children. And also for shenanigans.
Yes. We are at $3,605 of the $4,000 total goal. We're at 90%. Final yet-to-be-unlocked segment is Shenanigans at Midnight Eastern. Thank you so much. And chat, if you could give Nut some feedback. Seems like everyone is really excited about this. Hi.
Hi. This is GX.
Hi, GX.
I'm going to preface this by saying I was kind of hesitant to even throw this out here because I don't have any background in any sort of game design.
That's okay.
And this is kind of like, to kind of explain my background and why I even thought up this idea in the first place, I consider myself a Shonen Jump fan.
Mm-hmm.
But even as far back as the 90s, I had never seen any form of Dragon Ball. And I sought to rectify that, and I have now reached, I'm going to say, I don't know, like 300, 400 episodes in of that show.
it's a long
and
one.
While there have been many Dragon Ball games, I kind of look, as I've looked through that series, I've kind of noticed... What is one of the biggest aspects of that series? Well, it's elongated training montages of characters spending years trying to build up to the next power level so that they can fight the big bad guy.
What is it, like and a hyperbolic training chamber or something?
Something like that. So basically, to go super conservative, to influence my love of Shonen Jump, I'm thinking a Tapper.
Okay.
And it is a Tapper based around Shonen Jump style parody characters, a ninja character, a pirate character, a martial artist character, a monster card summoning character, that kind of stuff that you could potentially choose at the beginning of your run to go through. And from there, go through different tapping based montages that end in a fight against a quote boss character that would also happen to involve tapping.
Okay. Are there any other details that I need to know before I start giving you feedback? Or is that just, is that what you got so far?
This is a really loose idea that I had only come up with about a week ago. So it's more thematic than it is gameplay, but to be fair, almost all tappers are more thematic than they are gameplay.
So, The two immediate pieces of feedback I have, and the second one might not be what you want to hear, but the first one is, I think that that would be really strong depending on the strength of the art style and animation.
Right.
I think that this is a very funny idea, a very clever idea. I really do. But I think that you're right because the tapping is the gameplay. This would be a flashy title. This would be a title that has lots of silly poses where you have to tap really, really hard to lift a rock or something, or just real quick cuts of, for instance, Dragon Ball Z, like zipping around and battling.
Mm-hmm.
The second is, I think this would be a strong case for an ad-supported free-to-play game.
I was thinking a nothing-supported game that I would just put out there to have a game out to inflict stupidity on the world.
That's fine, too. The ad-supported mostly came from the question of, what's the best way to monetize? Because this sounds like something with a general enough audience and that you would want a low enough barrier to enter that you wouldn't want to be a premium, like, $5 game. But it also, there's no real room for microtransactions, and microtransactions just generally gross me out. So that's why I was thinking, you know, throw some ads in and, like, maybe just a banner ad at the bottom of a phone or on the side of a web page.
Oh, dear God. Fake ads. Fake ads.
Yeah.
Especially, oh, God.
There's a lot of silly parody places you can go with this. I really do like this idea. The basically my two pieces of feedback are, if you are looking for any form of monetization, that would probably be the least gross way you could go with it. And most appropriate. And then the other one is that most of the work would probably be going into the animation and art.
Right.
I think it's a very strong idea. I think it's a very silly idea. It's pretty lighthearted. I think a lot of people who are currently in their early to late 20s, basically in their 20s, early 30s, do have this shared background of something in shonen style. And I think that this would be really good of tapping into that and making a lot of people laugh and get really engaged into it. Do you have anything else to say on the project?
No, like I said, this was just kind of I'm watching this, what would be the best way to represent this aspect of something that, let's be honest, most shonen style anime have some form of another.
Yes. No, a lot of, I don't know if you're looking at the chat, but the chat seems to be all over this idea as well.
Hey, if somebody else has the capacity to make that, I have no problem opening it up because I don't have much of an intention that this will ever actually get made, but I was curious to the response and the potential for it.
I think that's the potential. I think, maybe, you know, not something that people stick around with for more than a week, but I think it could get a very broad audience.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Be sure to talk to Carmine and claim your prize.
Thank you much. I appreciate it, Seren.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
And we've got our next one coming in. Oh, yes. This is the halfway point, so I will take this opportunity to remind you, email contest@nintendoworldreport.com with the keyword design to become eligible for a prize. The full prize list is available in the What Are We Doing section at the top of the page, and we are still currently at $3,605 out of 4,000. And now, hello, you are on the air.
Hello, this is Steven Shook. You will hear me later.
Okay.
Yet again, but I've got a game to pitch and everything.
Awesome.
And everybody follow me on this one and everything. And Donald, don't groan because you've heard this one before. So I'm thinking squarely in the about $5 to $2 range. and then everything, something on Steam and on digital download only, no physical release. But mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what's the true derivative of an RPG? Well, true derivative of an RPG is we play RPGs to raise bars.
The numbers just get higher.
The numbers just get higher. And then I'm thinking, you know what? I actually enjoyed Weapon Shop Diamase quite a bit. I really like the Twitter feed aspect of it. So here's the whole game. So there's a Twitter feed, and you make friends and everything. But you don't have really – you have a character, but you don't have a character because bars to grow bars to do things that grows bars, and you tend uh-huh. your bars.
Okay. What would be the core gameplay? Hello? I think we are having some technical difficulties. Don, James, can you hear anything?
I can hear you. Hello, everybody.
Hi, because I wasn't hearing anything coming from Steven.
I don't know what happened to Steven. He's not responding anymore. So
yeah, I can hear you, but oh, he's typing.
He's typing.
We might just have to re-add him to the call. Oh, Mike's that's not good.
Okay. So, from...
Do you want to give him a chance to try to resettle and...
Sure. Steven, James actually wants to pitch something. So, is it okay if we remove you from the call for right now? And then, yeah, if you want to come back in, you can skip the line because you already were there.
I will add Stephen back in when the moment arrives.
Okay. Message Don as soon as you get everything going back up, okay? Cool. Okay. So, there we go. So, James, you said you had something.
I do. So, I am taking a job over at Tecmo Koei. So, I have all the budget of a company that is Tecmo Koei.
No.
I've thought about this game for a while, and I'm actually going to take it back all the way to the first Twilight Princess trailer. The first teaser for that game, they yep. showed off Link about to run down this huge horde of enemies. Or rather, they showed this huge horde of enemies, and then they showed him racing from the castle to meet them.
They James, never actually can I interrupt you to say that this game exists on Wii U? It's called Hyrule Warriors?
I'm not done yet.
Okay.
I'm not done yet. But you're right. So they never actually show him fight that big horde. And in fact, that never really happens in the game. You have these like small encounters that are all scripted. But one of the things that the Warriors games don't really do is that all of the battles take place in a silo. You know, there is this weird labyrinth and the enemies are there and it's pre-scripted where you run into them and you just kind of hack through them at your leisure.
Mm-hmm.
What I was thinking about more is inspired by Shadow of Mordor, where there are enemies that move around the map, and you can encounter them at your decision.
Okay.
A game where it's a more open-world version of the Dynasty Warriors game. Not as many enemies, obviously, because no system could handle it. But
yes.
Your side has armies in the field, and there are opposing forces in the field that control territory on the world map. And your job is to essentially, while trying to play through a more generalized action game story, prevent mm-hmm. essentially the situation from deteriorating. So you're racing from place to place to put pressure on the situation. It seems okay. like that's the next step for Tecmo in their games, or Koei, I guess, in this case.
Yeah, it does.
Because they've started to tinker with the format, and a game where you have to decide not just, am I going to go down this path or this path, but am I going to go here knowing that it's going to take me time to get back?
Mm-hmm.
It's either a terrible idea or it would actually be a nice evolution for their system, but I'm not sure yet.
So, you've played Hyrule Warriors, but not Hyrule Warriors Legends, correct?
Correct.
So, what Hyrule Warriors Legends did, and at least, you know, they did this because 3DS is a portable and to shorten the play times of each mission and lessen the headache. But you can, there are multiple characters, you know, in a Musou style, and you can just tap on the bottom of the screen to just jump to where they are. But then also there's teleportation, like shortcuts, like just owl statues. And I think that an owl statue equivalent would be necessary for this game to be tolerable. Because if I'm sitting and I'm playing a more generalized character action story, and then I get a notification in this open world that think like obviously this wouldn't be the scale of a Xenoblade Chronicles X, but think about if you're on the right half of Oblivia and you get a notification that shit's going south in the western half.
Right.
Like, and you don't want to just drop everything and spend 10 minutes running.
Right. The thought was that sometimes you may have to make the call that it's just going to go bad and there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay.
Because I think the one thing about the Warriors games as they stand is that you are so omnipotent that there's never a scenario where you just have to say, well, let's hope for the best and and let it go. But I could see warping if time passed while you were warping. So let's say you moved to Oblivia and the clock advanced.
Yes, not so that you are omnipotent, but warping such that you don't the player doesn't have to spend 10 minutes running.
Okay. Yeah, I that makes sense.
Yeah. Because otherwise that game, like when you decide that either like they're attacking your base and it's critical because you're about to lose, or you decide that this is something that you really do need to do, running there and slashing through a couple trivial enemies on your way isn't going to be the appeal of that game. The appeal of that game is going to be the decision-making that has to go down on a moment's notice.
Right. You have to decide this is time to take action.
Yes. And I do think that is a good next step for that style of game, but you do need to alleviate. You do need to, unlike Koei Tecmo, you do need to think about how the player is spending their time.
Yeah.
It
was either this or you were going to get the Waluigi Atelier game we've spoken about, so.
Yep.
I'm really curious what they can do with it with this format. They've started experimenting it with like our next mention of Attack on Titan.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the answer is they don't need to. They'll just keep making them.
I mean, people keep buying them.
It is a mystery.
Have you played any of the Warriors Empires game?
I have not.
So that is more strategy, and then once your strategy battle executes, then you go into a Musou style. So the Empires are actually the ones outside of Hyrule Warriors that I do recommend to people. That said, this is significantly different enough, but I would also recommend that if you just from an intellectual perspective of what it would be like, if you were to follow up and just look at how they handle the DW Empires games, I think that you would come up with some further ideas for your idea, or further details.
Cool. I'll give those games a look.
Awesome. None of them available on a Nintendo platform.
Yes. That's not surprising.
No, they give some of the mainline games, but none of the three other versions.
It looks like Sarek is back.
Yep. Thank you, James. I would say to go get a prize, but you're ineligible.
I am ineligible.
Hello, Steven.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, you're back.
I am back.
So. Real quick, someone in chat just pitched the idea of Senran Kaga to Waluigi, and I want to call that out as no. No, you're not allowed to do that. Okay.
Oh,
I just wanted to call them out specifically that was a bad pitch.
I want to say 1 second, Waluigi dancing all night.
Yeah.
Hey, there's precedence for that. Waluigi is one of his key feature game is DDR Mario Mix.
It's true. He is a dancer. Anyways, moving away from Waluigi, screw you, James. Moving away from Waluigi, let's get back to your pitch if we can, Stephen.
Okay, so where we left off, I was pitching my bar game.
Yes.
And so you have a Twitter feed up top like Weapon Shop Diamasi, and you've got all your bars. You would still have events like battle and everything, but they would be determined by the stats you set by your bars. And then they would influence the bars themselves. Then you would get friendly bars would show up considering your decisions and stats that would represent your friend that you would interact with for a while. And eventually, the gameplay would morph so that it started taking on an aspect of elite beat agents, where your friend bars start becoming things more aligned the lines of tracers and spinners to start doing things with them beyond just managing your tending to your basic stats. And your battles that you go through with stats would also still give items and everything like a traditional RPG, and those would also be used to enhance your bars to different features of the bars.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Can you walk me through in as many details as you feel necessary 1 minute of gameplay? Just what would you do over the course of 1 minute in this game?
Okay, so over the course of 1 minute, the Twitter feed would, you would have your health bar there. Early on, it wouldn't be much, but you have your health bar. Your Twitter feed would show, it would mention that something like you're in combat and stuff. Your health bar would start manipulating and everything. Then you've got your common RPG stats that you would allocate to try to conquer the enemy. And you would also be able to use items to keep your bar going up.
Okay.
And everything. Initially, the next phase would be it would start doing... Have you ever been a healer in World of Warcraft?
No.
So there's an interface for healers that are mods where you're watching bars. And as the bars go down, you need to use the appropriate heal because they represent characters who could die. So then you would start using abilities on these bars that would up, and they'd be based, the abilities you have be based on how you manipulated the other bars. And everything. So it starts becoming a more click-based game. And as it morphs, it comes becoming more of a sort of a, once you get that more in the groove and stuff and be able to follow the feed better, it will start becoming more of a rhythm-based game where you start introducing special bars that allow you to do special things.
Have you played Adventure Capitalist?
Adventure Capitalist. I have not. I've heard about that one.
I would say give that a look. It's Adventure Capitalist. It's on Steam phones and for some unholy reason, PlayStation 4. And it's free to play. Just download it and play it for a few minutes. And I would say look at what that game does and how it handles your sort of new game plus currencies like angel investors. Is what it is in Adventure Capitalist. These types of games usually have some sort of new game plus currency. And I would look at that and see how you can bounce that off of the ideas you already have. Because I think you have a solid foundation. I'm just worried about the longevity.
Okay.
You
know, a chat system would probably help with that.
Yeah. So that's sort of my only real concern. You wouldn't need a large team. You wouldn't need a lot of assets. It would mostly just be system design, which you seem to have an idea of. I would just I hate to say like look at the competition, but I would look at how other games are handling it and see if they spark your creativity in any way.
All right. Well, thank you for the advice, and I will drop off.
Thank you so much. Go talk to Carmine for a price.
I'm not eligible.
You're not eligible? Sounds good. Thank you very much. So it's looking like Nut wants to give another pitch, but I want to open this up just through voice. If anyone else has an idea that they want to pitch before we start going and letting other people have a second try, which I'm not opposed to, but if anyone else who hasn't gone yet wants to, go add Don to Skype. That's DAANLIVE, Don Live, one word. Staff members eligible. If anyone just wants to give one quick pitch before we wrap around and see if anyone has seconds, like not, then you are more than welcome. In the meantime, oh, we have someone. Awesome. Don, can you get them in? We currently have $3,615 of $4,000. We are $385 away from unlocking shenanigans. We do still have quite a few hours left to go for that. I've been pestering James that maybe he needs to start thinking of stretch goals. But as a reminder, time is running out. We only have 15 minutes of this segment. But if you want to use this opportunity to email contest@nintendoworldreport.com with the keyword, with the keyword design, you can be eligible for this hour's email prize. Hi,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Yeah, so my idea is pretty niche, but here we go. So I'm actually a big fan of treasure shooters.
Okay.
So I always wanted something like that, but a third-person game, like 3D. But that's hard to do because, you know, it's hard to take that because you've got so much control in a treasure game. It's hard to put into 3D because, you know, like the camera.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I feel like Sin and Punishment was their sort of attempt at that.
Yeah, I was thinking like something like that on rails. And you could use the Wiimote as a gun or like a sword for up close combat. And basically, the enemies are flying at you, and you just gotta get out of the mission alive.
Okay. I guarantee the answer to this is no, so I'm not gonna ask. I'm using the word play. Have you seen anything of Zengeki no Regenleave, a Japan-only Wii game published by Nintendo late in the system's life?
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
Okay, so that is a Wii Motion Plus game where you do handle melee combat with that in a larger 3D environment. Would that be, for imagining how your game would be structured, would that sort of be the idea of like a large field with lots of enemies everywhere and a sword and a gun?
No, so like on rails.
Okay, so what would be the biggest differences between this and Sin and Punishment?
What?
Like Sin and Punishment 2.
What's that?
What would be the biggest differences between your idea and Sin and Punishment 2?
Sin. Well, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right.
Okay.
No, I've not seen this before.
Are you just looking at it?
Yeah.
Because I think this is exactly what you're describing.
Okay.
It's on Wii. It's on the Wii U Virtual Console as for Wii as well in all regions. It's very niche, but I really do think this is almost exactly what you're describing and want.
Oh, I'll check it out.
Awesome.
Okay.
If you are eligible for a prize, you can go ahead and ask Carmine.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Sin and Punishment 2 and 1 are great games. So, question from a chat that was Don brought to my attention. GX asked what I feel is a good game-making engine for beginners to start learning how to design for a variety of platforms, especially if you're starting from nothing but a very basic understanding of programming logic. So, if you let's remove the various platforms, and let's just say that with little, like you have a general understanding of sort of how the logic works, and you're okay using placeholders, and you just want to get from concept to prototype, the HTML5 engine construct 2, which I will put in chat real quick, is just how it sounds. Construct 2 or construct 2 is really useful at taking a general idea of what you want the end result to be, and you can sort of design by Legos by just putting in the images for like the assets, just putting them in the world, and then clicking on them and assigning English language rules to them, like on right, like click right on D-pad, character moves right at like 5 pixels per second. Someone linked it in the chat. I'm just going to say yes. That's not going to play for the archive. I'm sorry. But a quick Google search for construct 2 will yield the result. There is a free version. It limits you in with what you're able to do. I would not recommend this engine for larger scale development. It's not really built for that, but it's a fantastic programming tutorial / prototype building tool that just lets you think about what you want in plain terms and get it built up. GX asks, a good student engine? Yes, it is a very good student engine. I would recommend it to people who are learning about game flow. It's not going to teach you a lot about actual code writing, but code construction and why things are the way they are is it's fantastic. It's almost unrivaled at just its ease of use and introduction. I have used it to do early prototypes of some games that actually end up getting canceled for various reasons. But if anyone wants to tweet me questions on Twitter, for instance, about specific questions about it, I'd love to get people going. A lot of you have really good ideas, and I think that it would be a good tool to start seeing if your 2D game, it is a 2D engine, if your 2D game is feasible. Don asks if it is easy to learn. It is very easy to learn. It is very, very clear, very, very self-explanatory, and you can just throw in like placeholder images and just quickly give them scripts, and you can have a working prototype in a few minutes. Okay. Don says we still have someone. If they can go quick, Don, you can feel free to add them. We're looking at 6 minutes or less. Okay. Hello?
Hello.
Hey. What?
Devil's go third. Ahead.
Yeah,
I'll make it quick because I don't have the strongest ideas. So I should reach out. So one of my favorite Super Nintendo games, Super Famicom rather, is Dragon Ball Super Saiyajin Densetsu, going back to anime. Mm-hmm. And I really like card game based RPG battles in general, and there's not a lot of them. So I've always wanted to see one that kind of plays on the idea that it's cards by kind of having it be a parody of card game anime, namely Yu-Gi-Mons, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So what would you propose the minute-to-minute gameplay be like?
Uh, So for battles or for like overworld stuff?
Let's go battles.
Okay. That was kind of my lowest point. Basically something similar to collecting cards and using them in the RPG battle.
Okay. Would the battles be more card-focused or more RPG gameplay-focused?
So in Zen Sensu, and they've tried to do it again, that's kind of the best one, the cards are mainly there to represent your attacks.
Okay.
But I'd perhaps want it to be maybe more RPG-based.
Have you played the Game Boy Advance game or the PlayStation 2 remake of the Game Boy Advance game, Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories?
Not since it came out on Game Boy Advance.
Okay, I would suggest revisiting that as a way to think about another way of doing it, where you do have a deck of cards and you are deck building, but your cards are like swing your sword and then a value of 8. And then if you play that same time your enemy attacks you, and it's not turn-based, same time your enemy attacks you with an attack value of 7, your card trumps theirs and you swing your sword and attack them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as far as combining card-based and collection gameplay and RPG combat, that's sort of what jumps to my mind. I can't say I've played the Dragon Ball Densetsu game that you're referring to, but it seems like it has merit, but it also seems like it's very easy to either lose control of the game balance or lose control of the scope of the game and spend way too much time and resources working on it.
Yeah, definitely.
That
could be a problem.
Yeah. But in general, I think, I mean, it has merit. Games have done it before. Games have been successful with it before. I would think about details to make your battle system unique. And if you ever want to give me more details, if you've thought of anything else, you can feel free to reach out.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead and let Carmine know that you're eligible for a prize.
I've won one already, so I assume I'm not.
Go ask Carmine.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good timing.
Yeah. So, the hour is just wrapping up. I'm going to stick around and chat for a little bit, especially with the next segment being the Famicast. If people in chat think I did good or bad, or you liked the segment, or you thought it was dull, please give me feedback. I was really nervous about this going in, actually. But I hope you enjoyed. If any of you guys have further questions, I am at SYCORAXIC98 on Twitter. There's an archive for this, so you can slow that down if you didn't catch that and you don't know it. Or you can just search Seren. And yeah, just hit me up, give me feedback, give me any other pitches, anything I missed. I will give that away in the chat as well. I hope you are all going, that you're all excited, and I thought you all had really strong pitches. I don't want to pick a favorite.
Jones.
No. No. No.
It's a good pitch.
Okay, actually, I take that back. Everything except for Atelier Waluigi was a strong pitch.
That's a great pitch.
Okay.
All right.
And well, thank you so much for tuning in.
Yep, thanks for doing it with us.
Welcome. I hope you guys got a good break. All the mainstays who are going to keep going at this for the next few hours.
Oh God! Thank you. You have no idea.
You're welcome.
All right, well, we are currently at $3,625 of our $4,000 goal, and I am going to go ahead and bring on Danny Bivens and his Famicast crew with special guests right now. Maybe. Gentlemen.
Hello.
Much.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
You are live, by the way.
You are live, by the way, so
enjoy.
Okay.
Oh. Enjoy.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Your mic is working.
Yay.
Thank God. our early morning brains, on the other hand, possibly.
Yeah, maybe not so much.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a bit of a problem.
8 a.m. here in Tokyo. This is like before dawn for me.
Yeah. I'm not a morning person myself. I don't even get up this early to go to work. I get up in 6 minutes from now. So.
It's basically Kamen Rider time for me. So I'm totally okay about this time.
I was just going to ask, JJ, is your son watching Kamen Rider right now? As
yes.
is mine. Yes. Kamen Rider, is it Execute now?
Exade.
Exade.
With a soft G.
Again, the gamer one. I talked about that on the last show, right?
Yes.
So I guess let's just go ahead and get things kicked off for real here. Hello and welcome to a special Famicast Cross 8-4 Play Redux again, part 2-7.
I think it's like 4 actually.
Turbo. Yeah, it's something like that. Let's just put a turbo in there. We'll be fine. I'm your host, Danny Bivens, and as always, I'm joined by James Charlton.
Hello. I'm video games, and so can you.
Yes. And like I said, we're joined by two members from the 8-4 crew, Justin J.J. Epperson.
Hi.
Hi, J.J.
Hi.
And by John Ricciardi.
Good morning, again.
Yes. So thanks for coming on the show, guys. Appreciate you guys coming and helping us out like you do pretty much every year. It's always awesome. So
to get that 8-4
bump. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yeah,
of course. No problem, man.
Cool. Right.
We should get at least 8.4% more. And this year, right?
Obviously.
Just put 84 cents in your donation and we'll know.
Yes, it's an 84 bump.
That's right.
Or $84.
Oh, that would work too, yes.
So we got a lot of different stuff to kind of touch on today, so I figured we'd just kind of get right to it. And first, I wanted to bring up a little bit about Monster Hunter Stories. Now, JJ and John, have you guys played this at all? Or any interest in this?
JJ's I know
you guys
played it, right?
Yeah, okay. I played the demo. Mm-hmm. And actually, my son has like been playing the demo nonstop.
Oh.
Yeah.
Has he been watching the anime at all?
No. I actually don't know when it comes on.
Yeah, I don't know either. My wife says she saw it on TV, and she said, you know, it's a good show for kids teaching about friendship and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on Sunday, so if it's on today, we'll probably catch it, because he seems pretty interested in it. I mean, otherwise, yeah, I think, the game's pretty cool.
Yeah, and for those listening out there, if you're listening to this live, you probably know what Monster Hunter Stories is, but just in case, this is basically like a, I guess for lack of better words, Monster Hunter for kids.
That's right.
But yeah. I think it is a lot more complicated than that. But I mean, basically, it's a Monster Hunter RPG. There's a different kind of visual style, like cel shaded, and instead of being a hunter, you're actually a monster rider. You're basically going around, kind of picking up eggs and fighting monsters and still murdering them. But you're raising them, I guess.
But you're doing it with another monster, so it's okay.
Exactly, it's fine. And yeah, so I picked up the retail version last weekend, and I didn't have a lot of time to play until just like yesterday. So I've been kind of getting into it, and you know, the demo, it was really fun. I had a lot of, you know, I had a pretty good time with it, but it was even just better getting into the full retail version. There's a lot of depth here, a lot of like Monster Hunter-y type of stuff that I wasn't really expecting. I mean, even still, you know, you can go fishing and catch bugs and stuff like that. You could even, I guess, I think craft different things and, you know, change like your outfits and all that type of crap too. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and it just looks fantastic on 3DS as well.
The graphics are really nice for 3DS, and you know they it's like kind of pseudo toon shaded.
Yeah.
I think they pull it off really well. You know, the animation's pretty cool. The cutscenes are very well animated, and it's got a lot. You can tell like the budget was really high.
Oh yeah.
You know, a lot of games for kids that come out these days for 3DS tend to be like garbage, total complete garbage with no like redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Sure.
So I was really excited to see that not only is the game really fun and it looks good, but it's a game that I can just let my, you know, son play and not really have to worry about the content and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're going for casual gamers too. I mean, you know, it's not like it's just for kids. I mean, they're trying to basically just reach an audience of people that didn't play Monster Hunter before. I'm actually really interested in it, but I haven't bought it yet because, you know, I'm almost scared to buy Monster Hunter these days because I know that it, you know, if I'm going to get into it, it's like there goes, you know, who knows, 80 hours of my life. And I'm still playing Dragon Quest VII and I just got a PlayStation VR. So like I've got a lot of other stuff to do right now. So I'm kind of waiting for a dry spot and then I want to pick it up.
Yeah. I hear you on that. Yeah. And I just wanted to talk just a little bit about that. I think it's really cool, John. I mean, you'd probably dig it, but like you said, sounds like you got your hands full there.
Dragon Quest VII, I mean, you guys have probably talked about this before, but it's like, it's such a huge game that it's like, if I start anything else like meaty in the middle of it, I know I'm never going to finish it. So I'm trying to just not get into anything else until I'm done with it. And I'm only like halfway through too, at like 40 hours. So
I was going to say, that's the Dragon Quest where it starts 40 hours.
Basically, yeah, it just goes on forever.
Actually, Danny, I have a quick question about Monster Hunter Babies. What's the kind of the playground, you know, kind of swapping mechanic? Do they have something like that? You know, what's going to get kids together playing together in the park or in the playground as they do in Japan?
There is local play. You can actually battle with your monsters and bring them and, you know, fight other people locally. And I think online as well. I haven't done it really.
There's no trading or something like trading eggs or something.
I don't know if there's trading. There's Street Pass that I just like unlocked the other day, so I haven't been able to really fiddle around with that either. But it's pretty neat. I'm having a good time with it. So,
it's good to know you guys are equally as like uninformed as we are when it comes to late games. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's got this feature, maybe not. We're the same way. It's like, yeah, we see other people playing and it looks really cool, but.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm getting like most of my Monster Hunter stories. You know, our mutual friend, I think, Adam Ivanko, Gaijin Hunter, he's like basically super hardcore into Monster Hunter anything. So I've been just sort of following him, but like he's not a good barometer for how good it is because like he gets so into Monster Hunter anything. So like watching him, it very well may be the greatest game that was ever made.
Well, it's funny because putting the fact that it's Monster Hunter aside, it is very much the kind of game that he would like because, well, I mean, it has this egg system where you go inside like a monster's nest and steal eggs, and then the eggs will spawn new monsters. But it's kind of set up like a gacha system where like you go into the nest and you just like pick up random eggs and just keep picking them up till you find one you want. And then when you go back, you tap on it to hatch it, depending on where you tap it, it gives the monster bonuses and stuff like that. So like there's this kind of addictive quality where you're like, okay, well, I got this monster. I want to go back and you know, get some more eggs and see if I can get slightly better stats, or you know, I need to collect more monsters. Ooh, hello. And so that sort of thing. And I think like, especially when it comes to Adam, who has kind of like an addictive personality already. It's definitely something that like if that's the kind of thing you're into, it will definitely hook you. And it's nice because the rewards are these really cool design monsters that you can use in battle and ride on as part of your avatar.
Right.
That's cool.
Okay, well, I think we're going to go ahead and move on to the next topic here. But before that, I'm going to tell you guys out there, the listeners, hold on. No, God, sorry. about the contest for this segment. If you want to win a cool regular prize, email Godzilla to contest at nintendoworldofpeace.com, and you will be entered in to win a prize. Again, that is Godzilla, the monster who resides in the seas of Japan, if you didn't know that.
Is this a Godzilla-related prize, or is that just a random Japanese?
Let's just assume it's a Godzilla-related prize.
Okay.
I take offense to that keyword. There was a Godzilla attack last week, for God's sake. Have some respect. Come on.
Sorry, too soon? Too soon?
Too soon.
Yeah. Well, moving on here. I know everybody out there, the listeners, you're probably thinking, oh, NX, we don't want to hear nothing about no NX. There ain't nothing that we need to, that we can even know about the thing. And yes, that's very true. But we thought it might be kind of fun to have a bit of a conversation about not just, you know, what the NX is, but what Japan needs for the NX. And I know that, you know, gamers in the West and media and stuff, they have lots of ideas of what the NX needs to be. But what about for Japan? What are some things, like maybe some games or features that Nintendo really needs to push on this thing to get the NX to be popular in Japan? So,
that's a good question.
Yeah, James, how about maybe you start out?
As the authority figure in this conversation, is that what you mean?
Exactly.
As everyone laughs.
Well, hey, we know as much as anyone else, which is more or less nothing. So,
yeah. As I was chatting with Miyamoto the other week, he said that Nintendo. I always feel that Nintendo designs hardware with Japan in mind, and everywhere else is kind of like a happy accident. It's like, I mean, go back as far as like, I don't know, the GameCube with the stupid handle, making it small and quiet. The Wii small and quiet, you know, and getting grandma to play. I mean, Right. Lapsed gamers, and then with the Wii U with the tablet, you know, because everyone's only got one TV. Well, no, they don't, but in Japan they do. So,
right.
Yeah, I think the NX, I mean, everyone's predicting it to be, and what's rumored, and what the freaking Pokemon guy said, right? He said, like, Nintendo are pushing the boundaries of handheld and home consoles or whatever, something along those lines, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be like, mainly like handheld focus, because that's what Japan likes, and that's the only kind of systems they buy, really. I mean, the PS4 and is just overtaken the Wii U, but that's not really much of a statement, is it? But it's nothing compared to the 3DS, so you know, people are going to focus on Nintendo are going to focus on handhelds, and maybe the home thing is more of like a let's give a little bone to the Westerners kind of thing, you know, because they like playing on their TVs. So they're going to try and, you know, bridge both sides and, you know, try and get everyone in like they always do, you know. So it makes sense to get as many people playing as possible, right?
Right.
So for that, I think Street Pass is coming back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, I think Street Pass has to be a part of the equation for anything in Japan. And like you say, like it's also, it just makes sense for them to, I mean, combining their console and handheld, like, production lines makes a lot of sense for them from a business perspective too. But like the biggest thing in Japan is probably the biggest key, I should say, in Japan is how do they make it work with your cell phone in a way that's not going to be like offensive to core gamers or, you know, intrusive or whatever, because that's ultimately like, that's really the only market in Japan that's showing any growth or like potential in the coming years, you know, sad as it may be.
It's weird, isn't it? Because Nintendo are now branching into like, you know, mobile games, and at the same time, they're going to be releasing like this console, which is like a portable thing, we think. So it's kind of weird that, you know, they're doing both. It's like, well, we accept that everyone has a smartphone and that's what they prefer to play on, but at the same time, we're going to release another portable system and hope you'll play that too. It's kind of a tricky line to run by, isn't it?
Well, yes. You know, I saw this. Interesting factoid the other day, and it was that the game iPhone game Monster Strike alone makes more money than all of the consumer gaming industry combined, and that's, you know, one iPhone game.
And I think Nintendo probably knows that and sees that and is thinking, okay, well, you know, we can't just make another game console, because even making like a really nice, powerful game console like a PS4 isn't working in Japan. And, you know, even in America, like console sales are not as good as they were. I think, you know, the writing's on the wall, and they have to move in a way that will accommodate mobile users who may or may not be interested in console games, but a machine that can kind of pull a few of those people off. Like, if they start to pick those people off, and you know, what I'm thinking here is, like, well, what we know via, like, the Eurogamer leak and stuff like that is that it's supposedly
assuming this stuff is true.
Yeah, assuming that's true. It's some sort of console hybrid, and it's using a mobile chip from NVIDIA. I guarantee you that it's probably because Nintendo wants a machine that, like with your phone, you can use in your house, you can use outside, and at the same time it plays games that you would on your phone, like Monster Strike or Puzzle and Dragons or Clash of Clans or whatever. I think, James, what you said about them designing consoles for Japan is totally true. But I think in this case, like, you kind of have to, because Japan is such a dire situation that, like, there's only, I mean, I think this is the only place you can go now. Like, just releasing good games isn't going to work anymore. And in America, it may not be that way yet, in Europe too. It may not be that way yet, but I think you have to start moving in that direction now before it's too late.
I think it's okay to do that too. Like, I mean, you know, the NX, I mean, basically, I think they're getting involved with phones now is purely to try to drive people to NX. But I don't think it's also like, I don't think it's them thinking like phones aren't the future either. I think it's also them like getting their feet wet and getting in the door early and realizing that like the future connection platform to like anything is going to be like a device that's in your hand and not your TV, right? So it's like, well, for now, we can't just give up everything we've built to now, like, you know, everything we stand for. And of course, they want to make good games. And obviously, you can't make really great controlling games on a phone unless they're like designed for a phone, which means touchscreens and stuff, and like not like stuff that core people want to play. So I think they're kind of just like trying to set themselves up for to be able to appease people that are on both now and make money, because that's where the money's at. But then also kind of be ready so that in the future, when everything kind of does move towards a device, because I think I've said this before on our own podcast, but I think that, like, you know, we have to think of outside of what's possible right now. And I think in the future, like, it will be possible to have good controls on a device. I don't know what, if it's like a holo controller or something, like, whatever, like, that's not my job. But like, I think that, like, you know, they have to be like sort of thinking that's kind of where things are going, you know?
Well, yeah, one day. But it's like saying, you know, one day VR will not make you throw up. You know, we can't really imagine that future at the moment. But...
Hey, it doesn't make you throw up. If the game is designed correctly, it does not make you throw up. As someone who routinely throws up to 3D games.
Actually, yeah, that's true. That's true. I think I would take your opinion over most people, JJ. I think we have similar, you know, throwing upness. nausea factor, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess with, you know, what Nintendo are trying to do, they, I mean, Animal Crossing, right? They've already announced that the next mobile game is going to be Animal Crossing. And else, have we also heard rumors that it's also going to be on NX, like Animal Crossing? Or they've said it's going to work with a future console version of Animal Crossing, right?
So I don't know if they ever
said, actually, I don't think they said future. I think it was just console versions of.
Okay.
So it could just be an update to the 3DS one.
Another update?
After yeah, why
the
not?
One? Okay.
Well, that's probably why. I mean, that could be a big reason why they're coming out with that. Actually, that's out pretty soon, huh? That new update for the 3DS version.
Plus or something, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it makes sense to put that game back in the. And they're selling a new package version, you know, that has that built in. Like, they're basically. Why else would you bring Animal Crossing back from, not the dead, but you know what I mean? I mean, it's been off people's radars for like a couple years now. All of a sudden, it's coming back. It's got to be, I think, because there's going to be interaction with the mobile version. I mean, why else would you do it now?
Right.
I mean, Animal Crossing has to come on NX at some point. I mean, if it is a portable system,
and sure,
then it makes sense, right? You know, if it,
totally.
If you can dock it at home and play it at home as well, you know, way cool. But it's another thing where, like, they're doing both at the same time. They're going to have the mobile version and then, you know, possibly a home version or whatever, portable system version. So, but they can't make sure, step on their own toes kind of thing too much. So, like, the mobile version can't be too good in a way. It can't be too much of a game. It's just got to be, like, I don't know, collecting, what is it, bells or, you know, designing clothes or something. It can't be too much like the real game, quote-unquote real game, because then people are not going to buy it. Assuming that the Animal Crossing game is free, like all the other Nintendo.
Well, yeah, you say that, and that's I mean, to some degree, that's definitely true. But I think also it's like, that's their big challenge, right? Is like, how do you find ways to make that game interesting and real without actually cannibalizing the console one? Because the truth of the matter is, like, they could potentially end up making just crazy amounts of money on the phone game, and then that one ends up being like where they get most of their profit from. I mean, I know it sounds kind of nuts, but that's like JJ was saying.
No, it doesn't. Pokemon Go, anyone?
Right. Well, yeah. And so the key would be, like, to be able to keep it going. Like, what they need to put their creative minds, which are, you know, among the best in the world, to, like, finding a way to keep longevity on these phones, right? Because, like, Miitomo fizzled out. If Pokemon Go is, like, better, I'm still playing it, but I mean,
yeah,
like,
me
definitely, it's, and it would be going more if they had more features and stuff, but they're not. But they need to be able to, like, plan those games, like Animal Crossing Mobile or whatever, to be able to be playable for a year. Actually, Animal Crossing is a perfect game for that, right? Because there's, like, events going on year long. But I mean, anyway, like, they got to basically make it so that it's going to be long time playable.
Yeah. That's good. The events thing is a big thing in Japan. Like, you know, whatever, Halloween as it is now. Halloween starts on, like, October 1st in Japan, it feels like, anyway.
What are you talking about? It's like August 29th, man. I saw decorations and stuff at Costco. It was crazy.
Jack-o'-lanterns wearing bikinis. Yeah.
Yeah. On the topic of Animal Crossing, I think, I think they've said so much that it's not, I mean, most of these mobile games are not going to be like the game that you play on your console. So, like, I think we'll probably see something more like the Happy Home Designer takes one aspect of the game that's appealing and fun and doable on a phone, and then just kind of builds around that.
I think Pokemon Go is the best example of that kind of thing. It's Pokemon, but it's not kind of Pokemon, but it's totally different, but it's Pokemon at the same time, and it's fun.
Right. Pokemon Go is like a unique, I mean, I don't want to get too far off on this because we could take up your whole hour talking about this, but, like, I think Pokemon Go is like a unique case, though, because Pokemon can sell on the characters alone, and there's like 150 of them or whatever that are like super well known, and just like, you know, it sort of has that element to it, whereas I don't think Animal Crossing could survive on the characters alone. Like, no one's going to recognize maybe like two or three or five of them. Like, I don't know. Like, people know like Resetti and stuff like that, but like, there's not like, and Tom Nook or whatever, but like, people don't know all the characters the way they do with Pokemon. So like, it does need to be something, but it's true. It could be like, you know how, like, remember when Animal Crossing came out and then they like introduced the island, and like the island was like this sort of separate mode that was really cool. I mean, not totally separate mode, but like, it was like this new element of the game, and like, they could do something like that where like whatever you do is only on the mobile game, but then like interacts with the real game. Would be really interesting. I think it'd be pretty fun. Cool.
Yeah. So should we like go around and say what games we want on the NX, or like, in, you know, with Japan in mind, what needs to be on NX?
Sure.
Animal Crossing, is that one? Or is that like in the bag?
I think they're all in the bag, honestly. I mean, I think it's a matter of it's going to be a case of when do you introduce the game. Like, Nintendo has a history of like, I don't think Animal Crossing would be an early NX thing, because that's something that they introduce when there's a little bit more of a user base. And then they use it to drive the user base to like the next level. You know what I mean? Like, they go from like level 2 to level 3 of like having so many people on their console or whatever. But like, they're going to go through probably all the mainstays, right? Your Mario Karts, and we already know about Zelda and everything else.
I think another big one that's probably fairly obvious is, you know, the next Monster Hunter. I mean, that's going to be probably a thing on the NX. I mean, it seems to me like stories. Hopefully. I don't think it's coming to mobile.
Are people still crying like that there's no, you know, HD version? Like,
oh, yes.
No, are people still crying about that?
Yeah.
Well, I think at the very least we can finally get a version that doesn't have PS2 graphics.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Wii was basically PS2, and then everything's been based off that since then.
Ironically, the Wii version of Monster Hunter is still the best looking one that's not on a PC. Wii was powerful enough to push more polygons, and like if you go back and look, the character models and the monster models in that game were much better than the other ones.
Well, what about HD? What about the updated one for Wii U? Like a launch title, wasn't it?
Was based off the 3DS version,
right? So just the HD
models are not good.
Oh right,
it has like all the extra like shaders and stuff, but the models are still 3DS models. So
yeah, it's just basically that blown up on your TV. It's slightly, it's barely HD, but it is.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Put that on the box.
Yeah, I mean, we already know that Dragon Quest is coming, right? They've announced that like Dragon Quest, I guess 10 and 11 are coming out on NX, and I mean that's exciting. It'd be really interesting. You know how they announced that Dragon Quest 11? There's like the like adult PS4 version, and then the like chibi like SD sort of old school looking 3DS version. And I think they both look amazing. I think the 3DS one looks like crazy good. But I wonder if somehow they could utilize the console and handheld variants of the NX to have like both in one, because that would be really cool.
Yeah, that's the exciting thing, isn't it? Like about all of these games is that we don't have to decide, do we want the home console version or the portable version? You know, theory we can have both at all times, always. It's exciting.
It'll be convenient, and if they actually work in ways to, and again, I guess disclaimer, like we really don't know, and like we're not working on any NX games or anything, so we don't have like stuff in the office or anything. We're not like blowing smoke. We really don't know.
So he says.
Like, and
excuse me. Told me earlier.
Sorry, I got to switch my NX off. No, and so I really don't know, but I mean, if all this stuff is true about the console and handheld things being separate, having two elements to it, like. Yeah, man, like they could be coming up with lots of different ways to make, like, I don't want to just like, take my guy on the go and level up by walking or some stupid, crap. But like, if there's like actually legitimately fun things that you can do or like different modes on the go from home, as opposed to it just being like you're playing the same exact game on the go and home, that would be really interesting to me. But whether it's going to be that or not, we really don't know. Right.
Get some Splatoon practice on the train on the way to work. And then play for realsies when you get home. Hey,
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, Splatoon like is a game that I think definitely needs to be close to launch, just because that is like Nintendo's best property right now. But I also think that like we have to see, if it is like this hybrid console that does the console and blah blah blah. I want to see how close parity they get with mobile in terms of the big mobile properties appearing on the NX.
Yeah.
I think you have to be reaching out to those people now to have any sort of chance.
Those people.
Japan at all.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Okay. Yeah, maybe it launches with like Puzzle and Dragons or something. I don't know.
I mean, I think that would be like,
a little sad, but.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think we should go ahead and transition into our next segment here, because it might take a little bit. And it's going to be a quiz. And actually, James, do you want to kind of explain to the listeners what this is and maybe what they need to do? So not only can they listen to us play the quiz and me probably fail miserably, but how they can also fail miserably themselves. So.
Yeah, we're about to do a quiz. I think we tweeted out the link.
Yes.
You did. Is that on the NWR Twitter feed and probably the Famicast one?
Definitely on the Famicast one. I can confirm that.
Okay. And I just put it in the chat as well. There's like a chat going on here. So hopefully you guys, I'll just paste it again for good measure. Oh, yeah, somebody. Thank you. Jonesy just did the same thing at the same time. Anyway, yeah, so if you click that link, log in with your name, and then if you want to win a prize, go ahead and put your email in the second box. And so we'll know to contact you if you win. Obviously, Danny, you shouldn't do that because you can't win, because that would be cheating.
Well,
not that you know the answers or anything, but actually, yeah, Danny, go ahead, put your email. See if you're not going to win anyway. So
got it.
So yeah, basically we're going to start this interactive quiz, so we'll all be answering questions at the same time. Hopefully you guys are all looking at a picture that says please stand by.
Yep.
With some hilarious music playing in the background. So yeah, We've got 10 questions, and whoever gets the most at the end will win. Danny, what are they going to win?
So we have a Famicom ROM Amiibo to give away. So,
woo!
Nice.
That fits with the theme nicely.
Yes.
So yeah, Famicom ROM Amiibo. If you want to win that, join in. If you're listening to like the pre-recorded version, you know, weeks after the fact, then you could just play along for funsies, I guess. And yeah, enjoy. So should we get started?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it.
So hopefully when I press this, things will move.
Oh wow, that's cool.
There we go. So yeah, like I said, 10 questions. We're going to start off easy. Do they get harder? Maybe. I didn't really think about it that much. It may go way hard and then slightly easier again. I didn't really think about it that way. But the first question is super, super easy anyway. So here we go. Last time we did this on the Famicast, we did a like fastest finger first kind of thing. We're not doing that this time. Just like if you get it right, the person who gets the most answers right. Okay, so don't worry about being fast, but there will be a time limit because I don't want people Googling. If we leave it for like 3 minutes, people are just going to Google the answer. So here we go. First question. What color? This is just to check if you're alive. What color are Mario's overalls? Blue, green, pink, black. Choose one of those and click next.
Obviously.
We can't say what we think the answers are, right?
Well, you can say that after we've seen all the answers. Just a sec.
Gotcha.
So it looks like everyone's alive and moving and breathing, apart from Danny. Oh, no, there he is.
Okay. Yeah. Not dead yet.
And, you know, this answer depends on what kind of how your CRT was calibrated during.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's right. So technically, yeah.
Let's just say, you know, the standard official color in all the artwork and everything, you know. Okay. Let's not get too crazy. Okay. So, yes, of course, the answer was blue. Oh. Looks like everyone got that one right.
No answer. What?
I couldn't pick.
No, there's some guys who have died, I guess, and they didn't answer.
I see.
Don't worry about that. They're dead now. Yeah. There we go. Cool. So that was the kind of not, that was not just the warming up question. Here's a kind of real question.
Nice.
So here we go. The next question is, what was Mario's original name from the Donkey Kong arcade game?
Shouldn't be too hard.
We got Bounce Man, Space Man, Rock Man, Jump Man, and Al. see what we got. Shouldn't be too hard. Just, you know, getting the wheat from the chaff here with this question.
Yes.
You know, don't want any wannabes here. Okay. Yes. Well, looks like James Jones is stumped by this one. Oh, no, there we go. It was a bit slower than the rest, but yes, of course, the answer was Jumpman. But he was also previously known as Mr. Video and even Osan. But those were like during the prototype stages. Don't know if you remember that Miyamoto interview.
Hey, look at his overalls there. I demand a recount.
Yeah.
Right. I think the first question was Super Mario Brothers. This is Donkey Kong. Yeah, we're all looking at a picture of the Donkey Kong arcade cabinet side sticker thing. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mr. Video went into another game, wasn't it? The what are those games called? Somebody's going to help me out in the chat here.
I totally know what you're talking about, and I can't remember the name right now. Space.
Yes.
Firebird or something, or I forget. I don't know.
Rhythm action game.
Urban Champion.
Yeah, that should be a quiz question. Obviously, we don't know it, so.
Rhythm Alien? Bit Trip Runner. Thank you very much, Jonesy, to the rescue there. Yes, that's right. It was Captain Video, though, not Mr. Video. So, yeah. Anyway, Osan, I guess that just means old dude.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Warming up now. Here we go. You ready for this one? So, which two sprites from Super Mario Brothers 1 are practically identical in design? So for this one, you need to select two from this list, okay? So we've got the shells, superstars, blocks, the bushes, the mushrooms, and the clouds. So choose two of those. Which one identical? Identical in design. Okay.
Gotta be the stars and the blocks.
Yeah. Come on, don't give it away.
Or like James Jones said, Mario and Bowser. They're identical. Come on.
They're both made out of pixels, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, I'm going to have to give a countdown on this one. Some people have been slow. 3, 2, 1, boo. Yes, of course. It is the clouds and the bushes. They're exactly the same. They just, are they flipped? No, they're flipped. Not even flipped, are they?
Not even flipped. Just different color palette. Yep. Different colors,
yeah. Why did they do that, somebody?
Save memory.
Save memory.
Jinx.
That's right. It's really hard making these kind of Nintendo quizzes when you know, like, everyone who's going to be doing it is, like, super hardcore Nintendo fans. Like, kind of puts a certain amount of pressure. It's like, oh, shit, I can't be too easy. But not,
yeah,
like,
you got to put up questions like, what color was the dog bowl you could inhabit inside of Geist for the game?
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, you know, what color was, like, the NPC in the third town's T-shirt in, like, ActRaiser or whatever, you know, like.
And then everyone gets it immediately. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, the theme for this quiz is Mario. So these are all Mario-related questions, various Mario games. So in case it wasn't immediately obvious. Okay, here we go. Next question. What are the bomb characters called in the Mario series? Bomb-om. Bomb-om. This doesn't make sense when you read it out. Bob-om. Or Bob-om.
Bob-mom.
I just realized that when you read it out, it's complete nonsense. This is like very much a visual question. Yeah. If you're playing along, you can obviously see the spelling a lot easier there.
That's true. You probably don't even know what I just said. Yep.
It all just sounds like I just said the same word four times.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, we got some wrong answers here, so it's not that easy.
That's good.
Okay. Hurry up, you guys. I don't want you Googling. Gonna do a countdown here. 3, 2, 1, time up. The correct answer was Bob-om. So, but if you say it quickly, it goes ba-bomb, like a bomb, a bomb sound.
Right.
Does anyone know what these are called in Japan? Excuse me, in Japanese.
I don't remember offhand.
Is it bom-omu? Just like that?
I don't think so.
Different. Yeah.
It may just be bomb.
It could be just bomb, right? Right. Exactly. So yeah, Bob-omb. We're just looking at a picture of the trophy of it from Melee. Bob-omb. Okay, cool. So trick some people up there. Hmm. I think Justin, you also got that wrong, right?
I think I did. Yes. The thing is, like, I always called it Bob-omb, not Bob-omb. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I always had that in my head as it being Bob-omb, but yeah.
That's right, yeah. I think I was the same way, and I only found out like in the last couple of years. So right. Yeah, it's tricky. Okay, let's move on. Next question. This is kind of a long question, but here we go. In the original SNES version of Super Mario World, there was one character that Yoshi couldn't eat, but yet he could in the Super Famicom version, the Japan version. What was it? So we've got the Bony Beetles, the Charging Chucks, the dolphins, or the urchins. Urchins are those, you know, obviously.
I actually don't know this, so I'm taking a guess.
I just played this on 3DS earlier this year, too. Crap. Japanese one, too.
Is that the Super Famicom?
I'm sure I knew it at one point, but I'm old.
I actually haven't played much of Super Mario World, so.
What?
Yeah, I was a Sega kid.
That's true. We've had this sad argument before.
We just evict Justin from the quiz immediately.
Yeah. Put some Sonic questions in there.
What color is Sonic?
Okay, this is tricking a lot of people up. I mean, it's not too hard if you think about it, if you know a little bit about Japanese culture, I guess. Okay.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Time up, guys. The answer was the dolphins.
Ooh.
So, people eat dolphins.
Exactly. So that's where I was going with, if you know a bit about
Japanese
culture. So yeah, in the US and European versions, obviously when Yoshi tries to eat them, it just does the block thing. It just goes boom, blocks it. But yeah, you can totally eat them in the Japanese version. And I think this was changed in the shitty Game Boy Advance versions. I think you can eat them in all versions in the Game Boy Advance.
Do we know the reason why? Is it just like a...
I don't know.
I'm sure it's a sensitivity thing, right? I mean, it's like, some, you know, it's not very nice to eat dolphins, so...
True. Well,
some people have theorized that it makes it easier for the like the European version, because you can't accidentally eat the dolphins because you use them as platforms, right? But true. Or people are just saying, yeah, like you said, just the fact that you're eating dolphins. Wasn't what was Ice Climbers? There was something changed in Ice Climbers for the similar kind of reasons, wasn't there? The polar bears. The polar bears are not in... No, not polar bears. No, the polar bears are in both. Oh, the seals. The seals. You can't club seals to death in the Western versions.
Yeah.
Because in Ice Climbers, you do hit seals, right? In the Japanese version, the Famicom version.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a shitty game. Who cares? but I think... Okay, next question. Here we go. Yeah, that tripped a lot of people up, that one as well. Here we go. Next question. So there was a game called Super Mario Brothers USA, released in Japan. Which game was this a blatant reskin of? The Fairyland Story, Towering Adventure, Rainbow Islands, The Story of Bubble Bobble 2, or Yume Kojo Doki Doki Panic? Sounds like even Justin's son knows the answer to that one.
Oh, helping you. Actually, he's playing Overwatch right now, so.
Hardcore. Okay, yeah, well, this is way easier, I guess, than the other one. Like I said, the difficulty, it goes up and down. Okay, cool, yes. That was, everyone got that super quick. Yeah, of course, it's Doki Doki Panic. But all those other the games that were on that list, they're all real, by the way. I didn't make those up.
I was going to ask that, actually. I wasn't, yeah.
Like, Fairyland Story and all that other shit that I just mentioned, they're all genuine Famicom games. But yeah, has anyone actually played actual Doki Doki Panic?
Yeah, I had it.
Oh, cool.
Oh, you want it? Is it? It's a disk system game?
Disk system game, yep.
Yep, does it still work?
It does, yeah. And I mean, it plays basically the same as Mario 2. I mean, there's little differences here and there, but it's more or less the same game, just with different characters. And slightly less interesting animations and stuff here and there, because, you know, when they ported it over, like they did with a lot of games back then, they sort of upgraded certain aspects of it.
Is it still a dream? Is it all a dream?
I don't think I've ever finished it. But I mean, the game it's Yume Tojo, right? So it's like, it's probably, yeah. Dream Factory is like what it's called. So it's probably a dream. Or at least it's all related to dreams anyway.
You know, it says Fuji Television on the package. Yeah, what is that? Like,
I believe it was based off a TV show.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Right on.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Here we go. Next question. I don't even remember number one at the moment. Let's say we're around about five. I don't know. Next question. The shy/angry nature of the boos in Super Mario Bros. 3, I think that was their first appearance, was based on Koji Kondo's fear of ghosts, a fever dream that Miyamoto had, Takashi Tezuka's wife, or a typical Japanese salaryman. Yes.
So our typical Japanese salaryman ghost.
No. That would be the shy/angry nature.
Ah, I see.
I'm gonna have to guess on this one.
This is a good one. I wouldn't feel too bad about not knowing this. It's pretty yeah,
I'm making sure that I answer within like 5 seconds whether I know it or not, so
yeah. Yeah, no googling.
Yeah, people are googling.
Nobody put your hands on the googles.
There's a good question in the chat right now. Question: was his wife a salaryman?
Ooh, yes. Yeah, the answer was Tezuka's wife?
Yes.
Waifu? Yeah, so apparently this came from an interview. The personality was based on his wife, who would be normally a shy kind of person, but then had like a really like explosive temper behind the scenes. Apparently this was due to, like, you know, Tezuka spending most of his time at work probably working on Super Mario Bros. 3, so all comes
so he was a terrible husband, and he put his wife in the game as a ghost.
But it's okay, because he made many children of the world happy, if not his own.
Does Tezuka have kids? I don't even know that.
Who knows? Hopefully. We've got to keep that DNA going.
Well, not if he, you know, doesn't get on with his wife. Not going to have kids that way. Yeah, that was an interesting one. So there you go. Next question. So during the development of Super Mario Bros. 1, Famicom, what item was Mario originally going to hold? So this is during the development stage of Super Mario Bros. 1. Is it a bat, a gun, a ball, a whip?
An Italian sausage.
Or E, an Italian sausage.
I'm just going to take a guess.
He should have allowed for write-in answers.
Yes.
That would have been cool.
I would have totally written in pizza.
To be honest, it's just because I couldn't be bothered to check like hundreds of answers. This is just to speed up the process.
Right, sure.
Who wins? Okay. I think we've got answers from everyone. Yes. Okay. Here we go. The answer was a gun.
That's right.
Oh, wow. That seems very un-Miyamoto-like.
It does, doesn't it? So, yeah, this came from a Famitsu interview, apparently. He said that during development, like, A was going to shoot bullets from a natural gun, and B was going to dash, and then up was going to jump, which is, you know, I'm glad they changed that, because that would have been terrible.
Yeah, they said he would shoot bullets. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily have to have been from a gun. You know how video games were back then. They could have just, like, appeared, you know, so. But...
right, out of his hand.
Bullets.
Right.
It's like Inspector Gadget.
But that's why I think, wasn't that like why they brought back shooter stuff in Super Mario Land? There's like shooting stages on in the
ship. Oh, yeah, there is. The airplane stage, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Cool.
Yeah, apparently they were going to have a shoot 'em up stage in the original Super Mario Brothers, so I guess they just postponed that for the Game Boy. That was my Super Mario Brothers, by the way. That was my first Mario game. Mario Land. Hmm. All the feels for that game.
I love that game.
It's great. Okay. How many questions have we got here? One, two. I think we've got two left.
Studio audience.
That's right. Justin's kid is very hyped for the next question. Okay, yes, yeah, so we've got two more questions. Here we go. The Wizard was basically a 97-minute long advertisement for Nintendo and Super Mario Bros. 3. But what was it called in Japan?
I know this one.
I actually don't know this one, so I'm going to have to guess.
Is it Sweet Road, Magic Gamer, Gamer Road, or The Ultimate?
Wow. If it's not, I would love to go back and watch the Japanese version of that. Like,
dubbed.
Yeah, I want to know what the Japanese version is. I love the Power Glove. It's so rad.
Is the Power Glove even released here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was I think it was from maybe Bandai? I forget who put it out. But but yeah, you still see it a lot in, like, you know, retro circles and stuff. Like, it's kind of a collectible thing here, too.
Cool. Okay, we all got answers here. Yes, 3, 2, 1. Time up, guys. There you go. It's called Sweet Road.
That's what is that the one I guessed? I forgot what I chose. That sounded Japanese.
I think Justin got it right.
JJ, I did.
Yeah.
I know this because like last year, people were talking about it on Twitter and like. Why would you call it Sweet Road? I guess maybe it's like a sweet movie about two kids who are sweet on each other. I don't know. They're doing a sweet thing for a little brother to take them to. I don't know.
American Road movie, according to the back of the box.
You don't really hear Japanese people use the word sweet, except for like with regards to like candy and sweets.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's a weird word to use.
Yeah.
I mean, how is, like, the katakana word sweet, how is it even used in everyday language?
I've never seen it or heard it used, really, except for, like, with regard to, like, at bakeries sometimes, you'll see it on stuff, but, yeah.
It could have been, like, a word that was kind of in rotation at the time, but it quickly dropped out of the vernacular.
You sometimes say, like, chocolate, don't you? Like, sweet choco or bitter choco, right? But
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to call that a movie. But I think, John, you just said that, right? It says on the back, American Road Movie.
Yes, American Canto de
So the selling
yeah, it's like a fresh feeling, emotional American road movie.
It also sounds like an adult movie title if you depending on how you read the cut the cover, but no,
it's so weird that they didn't like push the whole video game thing, and then even on the box it says the wizard on the back, so it's like
it has the logo.
They often do that on movies when they completely change the title. They sometimes have the, you know, the English title, right, like little text right at the bottom, so you just say, you know what the hell movie you're looking at.
Yeah
And it's this is the super subtitled version. So.
I want to watch this. We got to get this and just watch it like on video, like stream it or something. That'd be awesome.
For people who are just listening to this, we're looking at the actual VHS cover of the movie,
which looks like it's a bit faded too.
Yeah, yeah. Some of this scanned it. It's been in a window for like 20 years, and somebody scanned it. Okay, guys, this is it. Last question. If I knew what everyone's scores were, I could put some kind of tension to this, but I have no idea, so let's just pretend everyone's on the same score, and this is it. This is the ultimate question. This is the ultimate. It's totally not. Okay, here we go. According to a 1993 Nintendo character guide, Yoshi's full name is what? T. Yoshiling Munchalot. T. Yoshisaw Munchacoopers. T. Yoshikoopa Munchasaurus. Or Denver the Last Dinosaur.
What does the T stand for? Like Theodore or something?
I think that's why I went with Denver the Last Dinosaur for the last one. Like, whatever. Okay. Oh. I'm surprised that most people are getting this. It's scary. Almost everyone's getting this right.
Everybody was like equally appalled when they saw the news for that like leak or whatever. When they finally released that like book or whatever.
Was it this year? Was it earlier this year?
The last 2 years or so. I'm not sure, but
ridiculous.
Really terrible.
Okay, the last guy's not answering, but time's up. Yes. that is not the answer. The answer is. T. Yoshisaw Munchacoopers. So this is an actual scan from that guide, by the way.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. Somebody had too much time in their hands.
Yes.
I don't mean the person who scanned this. I mean the person who came up with T. Yoshisaw Munchacoopers, by the way.
That is. Yeah. It's just so random. I mean, no one ever knew about this until it was like released. It's just so bizarre. I mean, do these, what are they called? Character guides. Do they ever? Have you ever seen one, like in real life?
I've not seen one. It's not weird to have that sort of thing, but it is weird to, when you have characters created in Japan, to think that the Western branch can just like go ahead and create backstories for these characters. Like,
right. That was one of those like Nintendo as a toy sort of thing back in the day, where these kind of decisions were probably more made by like an advertising firm who wanted to appeal to children and stuff like that.
Like some dude who used to work at Hasbro or something.
Yeah. And I'm guessing the T is like Tyranno or something like that.
That's a good point, yeah. So the text here says, from the character guide, it says, Yoshi, properly known, not previously known, properly known as T. Yoshisaw Munchacoopers, has been held captive in an egg until Mario, Homo Nintendus, popped along and rescued him. So there you go. Even Mario has his own Latin name.
Right. I mean, it's confirmation that Mario isn't even actual human. He's a...
He's a Homo Nintendo.
Nintendo variant of the human species, I guess.
Yeah, so.
Can you imagine if that got out in the playgrounds of the 80s? That's what it was called.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, that is the end of the quiz. And Danny, while I check the scores... Can you just kill some time?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, I thought we should go ahead and give an update on the donations here. And as of right now, we have raised, thanks to you guys out there, a total of $3,650. Nice. 91% of our total here. So thank you guys so much for that. Yay.
Woo-hoo.
And, hey, like we said earlier in the show, if you guys want to do a bit of an 8-4 bump, maybe add 84 cents, $84, $8,400 to your donation. The kids would be very, very grateful for that, I'm sure. So,
all for the kids.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And Tezuka's wife. Yeah.
too soon. She might be listening.
She could be. So actually, John, I saw something on Twitter that I wanted to ask you about. So sure. Are you going to the Zelda concert tonight here?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool. Cool.
Tonight, 12 hours or something. Not even like that. Less than that. Yeah, it's at 6 p.m. in Tokyo. There's the Zelda 30th anniversary concert. I think this is the third one, actually. They had one in Kyoto a few weeks ago, and then there's going to be another one like this afternoon, and I'm going to the evening show. But yeah, this is like my fourth Nintendo concert, maybe. Like, it's weird. Wow. The concerts in Japan, they're all like a lottery system to be able to buy tickets. And I've somehow managed to win every time. And I know people who couldn't get in this one. So it was, I teamed up with some other people and like, it was like, whoever wins, we'll get tickets for the other guys. And so I happened to win. So it's going to be class.
I tried to get in on this one too, man. I couldn't get it.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. But hey, it's okay. I went to the one years ago with the release of Ocarina of Time 3D here. Cause there was a special, ticket inside of the game to give you a chance to win, a chance to pay money to go to the concert, you know.
Do you think at the end Fred Savage will come out and be playing Breath of the Wild on a large TV?
That's the only way. They're gonna drop him down from like suspended like things.
Right.
Actually, you know, I was just, you know, looking at the back of the box and like they don't even mention Fred Savage on the box. It's like a Christian Slater movie in Japan. Yeah. Like I guess because nobody knew who Fred Savage was.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think they what was that show?
I don't think anyone ever years. Knew who Fred Savage.
Yeah, I don't think they had Wonder Years here. So.
Yeah.
Honey, did they have Wonder Years here?
No, that's a good question.
Yeah.
We could look it up, Uncle Google. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's usually a question I would ask my wife, too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yes, we have a winner.
Okay.
It is, well, his nickname, at least, is MASB.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Did he get everything? Or
Make America Super?
No, he actually got... no, actually, sorry. We've got a draw here. I've just been confirmed that this other person was not staff. Okay, yes, MASB and one other person, Peanut B Crunch, drew at 9 out of 10. So
nice.
Hopefully we'll be able to get both of you guys a prize. Might have to
rip the amiibo in half.
Yeah, it's all ripped. Okay, so yeah, congratulations to you two guys. Hopefully we can both get you something. One of you guys will have to get the amiibo. The other one will get something equally awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. So yeah, well done to everybody. Everyone did pretty good, at least over, let's say, 7 out of 10, most people.
Yeah. How did...
I guess you guys want to know how you did, right?
Yeah.
So Danny, you got 8 out of 10.
Oh, okay, cool.
Well done. Good job. Justin, you got 7 out of 10.
Nice.
Hey.
And John, are you John? Yeah, John TV, right? John, you got 8 out of 10.
Nice.
So yeah, Danny and John here on the live people. Well done. Good job.
I got screwed over by the bomb-ombs. God.
Damn bomb-ombs. By the way, Wonder Years was in Japan. And it was called Tsubarashiki. How do you say that? Nichi-nichi? Like, days? Hibi, I guess?
Hibi.
Basically, like, wonderful, magnificent, wonderful days, or whatever it was called.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
Cool. There you go.
So are we okay for time, by the way?
We got 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. Yes. So, any plugs? Anything to talk about?
I want to plug the Super Famicom video I'm watching right now. If you go to our website, 8-4.jp, where we post the podcast, like JJ puts links in every episode, and he put a link this episode to a 1-hour-long video from 1990 about the Super Famicom that somebody like took off a VHS tape and uploaded in Japan. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's just like footage of all the launch games before they came out with a few people in weird outfits and some strange commercials and stuff. But it's a pretty cool piece of history. And I've been watching it the whole time we've been talking. So recommend.
Buy Gotta Protectors on the 3DS eShop.
Yes. We've been plugging that every chance we get. It's a really awesome game and nobody pays attention to it. So please check it out.
Do it.
Cool.
Thanks for having us, guys.
No, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, for real. So I guess waiting to come on next, we have a Super Mario RPG retrospective.
that's coming on here in a very few minutes. So those guys
never heard of it. Didn't come out in Europe.
Oh yeah, you're one of those guys.
Thanks very much, Nintendo. Thanks for bringing it.
Oh, bummer, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. How many seconds we got left? Can I just list off all the RPGs that never came out in Europe?
17 seconds.
17 seconds. Okay. Super Mario RPG, Chrono Trigger, all the Final Fantasies, all the Dragon Quests, Earthbound. What else didn't come out? Can anyone else think of any awesome RPGs?
That's why you guys are into the Amiga so much. You didn't have anything else.
Yep, lots more. Please understand.
So glad that I wasn't born in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially in the 90s. It's They've made up for it since then, I think. I think they've overtaken NOA since then. But yeah, back when I was growing up, holy shit.
Just enjoy your Terranigma, JC.
I did. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so I guess we're done. Thank you, guys. Yeah. And thanks for donating.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
He knows what the NX is.
Yeah, he does.
All right, so, sorry, I did not mean to have dead air there. I am working with Andrew to get his crew ready for the retrospective on Super Mario RPG. Right now, update on donations. It has not moved in a while. $3,650 of our $4,000 goal. We are running low on time to unlock Shenanigans. And I'm torn. Shenanigans would be good. But, man, 13 and a half hours, it's a lot of show. I'm actually waiting for Brian to call me. Brian, if you're listening. So we can start the next segment. I think I may have been responsible for wrangling this segment. My bad. So how's everybody doing? Everybody enjoying the show so far? It's a good time. All right, I don't care who's hosting the segment. Just message me so we can start the stupid segment. All right, so this is not technically dead air.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, we're in this chat. I don't know what chat we're in, Neil. I just called you wherever I had you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crap.
Hold on. Let's change calls. So, historically, we've had one chat all day, and there's like a million people in it, and that got confusing. So, I'm just creating a new chat every day, or every segment, and that makes it easier. All right, that's better. Hi, guys. I screwed up this transition by not having it queued up and ready to go. My mistake.
Oh, that's cool.
I've been at this for a long time. All right, so you all are going to talk about Super Mario RPG, so I am going to let you guys at it.
All righty. Well, hello, everybody. This is Brian Rose, and I'm here with Neil Ronahan.
Hi.
And with Andrew Brown.
G'day.
And for the next... about hour, we're going to talk about Super Mario RPG, and it's a game that we all love and cherish very much, so we're going to get into it. But before that, I have a message from Carmine. Don't forget to enter this hour's contest. Email Mallow to contest@nintendoworldreport.com to enter to win a regular prize this hour and be eligible to enter to win a big prize during this quarter of the telethon. So if you win, you're still eligible for the other. So a lot on the line. Pretty damn cool. So going into our topic, we're going to talk about Super Mario RPG. None of the other Paper Mario games, those games are pretty cool, but to me at least, Super Mario RPG is one of my favorite games of all time, and it holds a very dear place in my heart because, you know, we should talk about, first of all, our first memories playing this game. It came out in 1997, and I was about, 9? I think I was 9, actually, so... before even playing Super Mario RPG,
Didn't it come out in 96? This is the 20th anniversary. Isn't that why we're kind of doing this?
It's possible. I always thought it was 1997 for some reason.
It might have been
fall 96.
I had a revelation recently that I didn't realize how close this was to the N64 coming out.
It was really close. It was like this and Donkey Kong Country 3 after N64.
Well, yeah, Donkey Kong Country 3 came out in 96. It came out like when N64 was on shelves, which is weird. But this came out in Japan. Yeah. It came out in March, which would have been 3 months before the N64 came out. Mm. In America, it came out in May, which was about 4 months before the N64 came out. In Europe, it came out about 10, 12 years after the N64 on Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm. You know, I might be thinking 1997 because that was probably the year I got it. I didn't get it right away. So, I got it in, I guess, September 1997. I remember opening it on a birthday. And, you know, before that, I wasn't really into RPGs at all because, you know, a lot of the games were not linear. And, you know, today we can go, oh, well, if it's linear, it's, you know, it's not as great. But, and, you know, I like games that you can go out and explore. But back in those days, it was really hard for me because I would often get lost. And, you know, in Final Fantasy games, it doesn't really tell you where to go. You kind of have to, like, talk to lots of people and, like, get a general idea of where to go. So it could be tough sometimes, especially for me, who back in the day probably didn't have, like, the best, detail to attention or whatever. So playing this game for the first time, I mean, it's pretty much, like, a great way to get into RPGs because you have the familiar characters with the Mario series and you have this charming writing, this very familiar gameplay. Well, gameplay in the sense that you can jump, and I think you can, in some levels you can use the star and you can beat everybody up and gain levels that way by using the star in some areas. And it's very much a game to familiarize yourself with RPGs, but at the same time also being very familiar with the Mario universe and some platforming aspects in there, not a lot, but enough for you to go, well, this plays kind of like a Mario game, but it's very much different in with the RPG mechanics and all that.
Like, yeah, so, it's a weird game.
It is.
And even more so, like, kind of thinking about, like, it's a game that I played close to release. It's probably Super Mario RPG is pretty responsible for, like, why I'm here at this website right now. I played it with a friend of mine a lot, and we would just incessantly play it over and over and over again. And that's when I went from just being like, video games are this cool thing I kind of like, to being like, this is incredible. Let me read this strategy guide. I want to get all the Nintendo games. Like, there's just something about, like, the dopey world in Super Mario RPG that I really enjoyed, like, kind of everything about this game. I think the music, which is, I think, kind of one of the first, like, preeminently all her Yoko Shimomura soundtracks, because I think she did some, like, Street Fighter 2 tracks, which are classic, but that was, like, part of a group, whereas this one is, like, this is how I learned who Yoko Shimomura was, was because I was like, who did this magic that's in Super Mario RPG soundtrack? And then found out who she was, and I've been a big fan of her work ever since.
She's awesome. I mean, I think she did the Guile theme for Street Fighter 2, and that's pretty much iconic to this day, Guile's theme. And
it goes
She composed the entire soundtrack for Super Mario RPG, and it's one of the first soundtracks I ever wanted to go out and find because it's all of that music is simply incredible. Just it's such a wide variety of music and ideas. It's really cool. Didn't you move on to go do the soundtracks to the Mario and Luigi games?
Yes. Yes, she did.
Yeah, I believe
she did,
so.
Like, Radiant Historia, I think, was her as well. It's just a random-ass RPG that I think is really good. Everybody should play it. It's on the DS.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So what are your guys' first memories of playing Super Mario RPG? I think he's talking about it, Neil, but what about you, Andrew?
Yeah. Being in Australia, I don't know how many American fans are aware of this, but this game never actually released in Australia when it first came out. It was right after the big, for lack of a better term, the kerfuffle that Nintendo had with SquareSoft due to the development of the PlayStation and the disc format. And it was one of two games on the SNES, two Square RPG games that were actually cancelled within any European or PAL regions. That was Chrono Trigger and Mario RPG. At the time it launched, I had a friend who was going to the States on holiday with his family, and I was like, oh my God, this game is coming out in the States. You've got to pick it up while you're over there for me. Please get it. I'll pay you whatever it is. And he bought it back, and at the time I had one of those crappy SNES cartridge converters, the Honeybee converters that let you play other regions, and it worked spottily at best. Like, to even get the game running, you would have to turn the SNES on and off some 50 times before that title screen with Peach would show up on the screen, and I'd be like, oh my God, stop flicking the control, the power button, it's actually working now. And so I would have to go through like vast portions of the game in one sitting for fear that it wouldn't turn on again next time I went to play it again. So it must have taken me about a week to get through the whole game. And like you guys, it's one of the best RPG games that I've played. I mean, it's so simplified. It does have a lot of my first RPG feeling. It's incredibly easy of a game. But at the same time as being the first RPG that people would get into, it would have a lot of the elements that were taken from Mario, that were taken from other RPG games, and just meld them in such a manner that just worked so well, and really get people into the genre.
Yeah. I mean, this was the game for me that got me into RPGs, because if it wasn't for Super Mario RPG, I probably would have never played, you know, any Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana, you know, games like that.
It was kind of like a gateway drug for me in that respect as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I was aware of Final Fantasy and the like, but then Super RPG, it was kind of that, like, oh, what's a Squaresoft company? What else did they do? And, I mean, it took a few years as I played Final Fantasy games to realize that, like, Culex kind of more represented Final Fantasy and wasn't, like, a straight rip of a villain from another Final Fantasy game. Secret boss in Mario RPG.
Yeah. Spoilers. 20-year-old spoilers.
You know, I ruined the end of Star Fox Adventures earlier. I'm a Maverick renegade right now.
Oops. But, oh well, those games are old. But yeah, this was the game that got me into RPGs. You know, the interesting thing about this is that, you know, Mario games have stories, but they aren't, you know, really, they don't go out of their way to be, like, expansive or, you know, things like that. So it's, I mean, you look at it at a Mario RPG, I think it's kind of weird that they have a story. And what I like about the story, though, is that it's so different. I mean, you have the characters like Mallow and Geno. I mean, Geno is, you know, to this day, people love Geno and his story. And, you know, it gives Peach, this story gives Peach more things to do because, you know, normally she's just, you know, she's kidnapped by Bowser, but this time she actually plays a vital role in the story, and you know, it's very
she
much
beats fools with frying pans.
Yeah, she is a frying pan master. It's very, very interesting. Mallow has, I think, symbols, and Mario usually has gloves or Koopa shells.
Giant ass Koopa shell, lazy shell, yeah, man. That's where it's at. Yeah. All about that lazy shell.
And Bowser, I think, uses chain chomps.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I just
Except
thought, man,
for the Hurley gloves. There's one.
And that's another interesting aspect of the game, that Bowser
joins up with you. And I mean, it's something very different than most Mario storylines. The most Mario storylines are usually, you know, I think we all know the story of, you know, pretty much every Mario game ever, but this one kind of changes the grain a bit. And, you know, even in later games like Paper Mario and I forget aspects of Paper Mario with Thousand Year Door, but it kind of follows the same grain as other Mario games, but this one, it really changes things up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the creative talents behind Super Mario RPG are at Alpha Dream now. So they've been working on the Mario & Luigi series, you know, that pretty much after Super Mario RPG ended.
Yeah. I guess we're talking about it in chat, but I mean, people say, I've always said Geno. Is it something different for everybody else?
I mean, like, the actual pronunciation of the name is Geno. As a child, I called him Geno. until, like, I had a conversation with another human being that like, I didn't grow up with, and I mentioned Geno, and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? You mean Geno?
I'm never going to be able to change that. since 1997, I've always said Geno. So yeah. I mean,
I'm with you. That's what I called the dude when I was growing up. But I think the pronunciation is Geno. Did Sakurai say it in that Smash Brothers Direct? Because that might be the answer. I think it's Geno. Yeah.
I know whoever did that direct, I think they said Geno.
Yeah. I found a kind of funny thing that I feel like goes to our audience in a way and harkens back to a simpler time. It's the press release for the Nintendo downloads back when Super Mario RPG came out on the Wii Virtual Console. And I don't know if anybody remembers that time where pretty much these things were spitting hot fire every week. It was just like these dopey things that tied games to holidays and all the other like. If people want me to, I can read the Super Mario RPG press release coming to Virtual Console.
Go ahead.
All right. The headline, Mario plus 7 stars plus 249 Virtual Console titles equals ? The launch of the 250th title available on Virtual Console, of course. What better game to mark the occasion with than the eagerly anticipated Super NES game, Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars? Whether you're celebrating the Labor Day holiday, relishing the last few days before school begins, or just looking for a brand new retro title to enjoy, this is one game sure to please. By combining the magic of traditional Mario titles with the renowned design skills of Square Enix, Super Mario RPG satisfies fans across the board. So if you've been waiting to take on Smithy again, or never even knew that Mario and Bowser, TM, were once allies, now's the time to experience one of Mario's grandest adventures. Still want more info on Super Mario RPG? Then be sure to watch the video now available on the Nintendo channel for a sneak peek on what the game has in store for you.
Awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I miss those. Now it's just that, like, this game's out, deal with it, I guess.
So this is for the Wii version?
For the Wii Virtual Console. Okay. The Wii U one's just like, it's a game, it's out, enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. About 4 months detailed. After European regions got it on the Wii U as well.
I think it might have been longer than that.
Oh, jeez.
Did you guys get Chrono Trigger on the DS?
Yes. Okay. I think my DS was US region, so I honestly don't know.
Well, at least you guys eventually got it. So, but yeah, what else? I mean, what are you guys some of your favorite parts of the game? I mean, for me, the one part I always remember and I thought was always funny was when you go to Marymore, and if you don't have enough coins, you become like, and you go to the end and you spend money on, you know, being all this luxurious suite. And if you spend all your coins, you are automatically. You automatically become a busboy of some sorts, and yeah. I think you get tips and stuff and enough to pay your way out. I think it's a small portion of the game. It isn't like vital or anything, but it's a very fun kind of side quest you can do if you're bored and if you want to spend enough coins to actually do that.
I kind of love the beginning of the game. And that, like, I mean, it sets it up in a really fun way where it is that typical, like, oh, just go and beat Bowser. And then you beat Bowser, and then just a giant sword crashes through Bowser's castle. Like, and then that just sets up the whole game. Also, the amount of talking swords in this game is off the chain.
Yeah, it's true. Xor.
Mac the knife.
Mac the knife, yeah.
Doesn't Blade talk at one point, the Action Rangers ship?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And especially, like, in light of Color Splash, where part of some of the complaints lobbied at that are the fact that it's just all toads. Like, Super Mario RPG is just, like, oozing with all these ridiculous, fun, and unique characters. Yeah. Like, I mean, the talking swords. Croco the Thief.
Yeah, Croco.
I love Croco, like a purple crocodile who just steals your stuff.
The Axum Rangers are pretty fun. I kind of like the parody of, you know, Power Rangers, Super Sentai.
Booster. Booster, there's a part of me that wishes that Booster was just Wario, because it does seem like if this game came out a couple years later, Booster would just be Wario. But there's something, like, just very creepy about Booster.
They're pretty much the same character anyway. It's just, the whole, that portion of the entire story, getting to Booster's tower, you meet Bowser, he joins your team, that's the most awesome thing ever at that point in video game history. Then they help you bust in, and the way he plays off his they're the Sniffit minions. And the personalities of the Sniffits together with Booster and going through the castle, and suddenly Booster appears on a train, and he's like, oh, I've captured this princess, but she keeps on screaming, Mario, help me, Mario, help me. I don't know what that means. Can you guys help me? And it's just the writing and the insanity of it all. And then it leads to the Booster Hill. There's a mini game where you're catching bugs. Oh, that's right. You're jumping barrels and you're trying to get Princess Toadstool, as she was at the time, away from him before you reach the top of the hill. And then there's the whole marriage sequence. It's just the most awkwardly obscure thing that I've seen in an RPG game. Just that sequence of events from when you first arrive at the castle up until you're fighting an inanimate a living.
You fight a cake.
Yes.
Like,
and then that's the cake gets defeated when they feed it to Booster.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love the bosses in this game. I mean,
Punchinello. Boyer.
Boyer, it was interesting because he would block some. I think he had like three buttons, and he would use an arrow, and you could block. And he blocks some of them. So like, if he blocks items, you can't use items, and that's pretty clever. I mean, most RPGs, there's a boss that can do that on occasion, but that was really clever for me at the time when I first played it.
Yeah, I like how it actually shows the button, and he like puts a lock on the button itself, and it's like, oh, so that button doesn't work on the controller. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of got that vibe, and the cake boss is really cool. Especially the second form is pretty tough. I remember that when I was playing it last time, and I can't pronounce the name of the Rose Town boss. It's starts with a Y.
Yardovich.
Yardovich, yes.
That's Seaside Town, isn't it?
Oh, Seaside Town.
Yes.
Yeah, because and then there's Jonathan Jones.
Rose Town is where, that's the area where Boyer's at, or Forest Maze.
Yeah, which Seaside Town Maze, is. Forest Maze is a great Yardovich. Music track.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of colorful bosses, and one of the most disappointing things, like you mentioned, Neil, is like, I haven't played the newest Paper Mario game. I played the Mario and Luigi Paper Jam, and that too has a lot of toads. And toads are nice and all, but it's kind of generic. And the thing I can say about Super Mario RPG is even today, by today's standards, it's kind of dated, but it at least has a lot of colorful, different characters. And there's a lot of toads. But there's also a lot of colorful bosses in between, and you don't really. I haven't played the newest Color Splash, so I can't like see if there's any cool bosses are not in there, but I mean, it doesn't really compare to like Super Mario RPG. I feel it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I dug Paper Jam, but definitely something. The lack of I don't want to say personality, just lack of like character variety is something that just, I mean, it's disheartening. And going back and looking, kind of revisiting Super Mario RPG for the sake of this segment right now, it made me realize how much like all of those characters. I might forget the specifics as much, because I did have a run of probably nearly a decade where I would play through this game at least once a year. It's kind of stopped when I started writing for Nintendo World Report. But like all of those characters, even if the details are a little fuzzy, like they're all very memorable because they're all like, there's like this very ridiculous nature of a lot of the characters, where it is kind of like this game is like Mario is put into a Final Fantasy game, but there's like, it's like twisted on its ear to fit the Mario universe, even though it's also like this very un-Mario universe kind of adventure. But back in 1996, we didn't really have what the Mario universe was defined.
Yeah, and they have really streamlined what the Mario universe is, and that you get it in a lot of games these days. It's not just, you know, Paper Mario or Mario and Luigi. It's pretty much spun across all Mario games, and that it's very consistent, and there's not really a ton of new characters. But, you know, I played Paper Jam. I reviewed it for NWR, actually, and I like the game. It's very fun to play, but it's also kind of generic and a lot of ways, and characters and settings, you know, things like that. And Super Mario RPG, I mean, that you do have those kind of tropes too, but I think it's more that Square Enix took more reign over this than Nintendo and created a lot of different characters, which is one of the reasons why you don't see them in any other Mario games aside from Geno in some spots. But Super Mario RPG is very different than any of the games we got after, but those were all created by pretty much either Alpha Dream or Intelligent Systems. So, that's one of the topics I do want to bring up too, is like, do you ever think that Super Mario RPG could get a sequel? Like, do you think Nintendo and Square Enix could collaborate and maybe come up with something?
I really don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it happening, but I know it is something that people have been clamoring for. And I know they've sort of teased it in the past. I remember reading one of the things with Sakurai saying, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was another game in this series? And the return of Geno and Mallow and all your favorite characters and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, if there was another RPG game that sort of at least paid homage to the characters and the environments that you met in the original Mario RPG, or had a cameo beyond that, like, I know Geno appeared in Superstar Saga as, like, a narrator or something at one point in a minigame, but we'd want to see the characters show up and be like, oh, this is what's been going on since then, thanks for remembering me, guys. Something to that manner. The first Paper Mario originally being designed to be like a direct sequel?
Well, it was called Super Mario RPG 2 in Japan. And I think it was changed to like Mario Story or something, I think.
It always had that like paper kind of design, but I think Intelligent Systems was working on that from the very start, weren't they?
Yeah. I'm not sure of Paper Mario's development history, but there was a time where it was referred to as Super Mario RPG 2. But I mean, maybe the best case scenario for any kind of follow-up is like the next Mario and Luigi game like features some of the characters, because at this point we know that like it's possible that, you know, a Geno Mii Fighter outfit can come out. Like, that happened. I have it. I've played as it. I've dreamed of more Super Mario RPG goodness, but it has not happened. But like, we know that, I guess, Square and Nintendo have talked enough to make that happen. I don't think we'll ever see them collaborate on a full game. I hope I'm wrong, but maybe the best we can hope for is if Nintendo keeps on the trajectory in how, you know, the Mario RPG series have become, then maybe the next Mario and Luigi could feature a little more, like, more deliberate references and more deliberate callbacks to Super Mario RPG.
Yeah,
sure. But I'm not getting my hopes up about that. I just think that's the only thing that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all depends on how successful it is on the Wii U eShop. And, you know, I think it's still on the top 20 to this day. I think it came out this summer for the Wii U, finally in North America, at least. I think it came out way before in Japan. I think Europe got it, too, before us. I forget exactly, but...
Yeah, I think it came out the end of the year, last year, in some places.
But, I mean, it would... be a surprise if there's actually, you know, like a follow-up to Super Mario RPG, because it's been a long time. It's been about, you know, we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of this game this year. And it's, it's still in people's memories, but at the same time, I don't know if Square Enix wants to develop the sources to actually, like, make a full-fledged game. I think they're very much willing to let Nintendo use their trademark characters, because, you know, the reason why we haven't seen Mallow or Geno or anything else from Super Mario RPG is because Square Enix owns the rights to all those characters. And, you know, it was shortly after this game came out, I think the next year, you know, they split from Nintendo and kind of just focused on PlayStation for many years until eventually going back around 2003. So, I mean, you can get cameos from Mallow and Geno and those other characters in games from time to time. But, you know, I just don't see, like, a full-fledged game. I'd love to see a remake, maybe. But I think that might be more realistic. But even then, I don't really know if that's something they want to do. But, you know, I have to hope that there's something along the pipeline, because it is a game people very much love and remember, even to this day.
I like the concept that Carmine has brought up in the IRC chat of Crisis of Infinite Marios. Like, I think that's the only way we can settle this together. Like, I think that has to happen.
That would be cool. I mean, like, so you bring in every Mario character. Every Mario ever, like Mario the referee in boxing or Punch Out or golfing Mario or Mario Tennis Mario or
RPG
Mario.
That would tie in with the Donkey Kong Historia that I'm currently working on.
Donkey Kong is still doing that.
It's on the back burner. It's always there whenever I'm like, I'll just do another pass on this.
Or Mario from Mario Brothers or Wrecking Crew with, like, the blue hair and different, you know, you look kind of different.
So yeah, someone in the chat mentioned that Square is credited for Geno's Superstar Saga cameo.
Yeah.
And also that in Nintendo Power and some screenshots, Paper Mario was referred to as Mario RPG 2. But it does, outside of, like, the kind of references and homages to the game in Paper Mario... the final version, it doesn't seem like there was any other kind of direct connection.
Yeah.
Other than, like, it was another RPG with Mario in it.
So Paper Mario did borrow some things. I think the items were the same. I know
The honey syrup.
Maple syrup maple syrup, honey syrup, mushroom, and mid mushroom, you know, those kind of things. And timed hits, but it was a completely different battle system. I think the timed hits were carried over, I believe, but I think...
Yeah, timed hits, that's definitely something that Mario RPG definitely brought to the table. That wasn't something that existed in RPGs before its time.
It was completely different. It was more participatory than in other games, like Final Fantasy. I mean, there's an active time system that made Final Fantasy different than in... or active battle system made different from other RPGs, but Mario RPG was more... you know, you keep pressing buttons and you keep getting engaged in the action. And I think that was one of the more bigger focal points of Super Mario RPG is, you know, in RPGs, it's more like you read and then, or even back in that day, you read and then you press buttons and you wait for characters to move back and forth. This was way more, you get involved, more involved.
It's more hands-on, definitely.
Yes, more hands-on in that you attack people and... you use timed hits, and the platforming aspects are far more prominent than you see in other RPGs, especially back in those days. So yeah, it's very much a game designed for. I have always thought it's very much a game designed for people who want to get into RPGs, so that they can later go, well, this is pretty cool. Maybe I'll finally get into Final Fantasy, or, you know, maybe I can try to get into other RPGs that are kind of like this, but, you know, I was too afraid to get into because I wouldn't know what to do. You know, kind of like that. I mean, that was at least my story. I think we all kind of agree. I mean, Alex, Neil, and I agree that's kind of what got us into RPGs.
Yeah. Same. And over the years, I think some of the Mario and Luigi games and the Paper Mario games are very good. Nothing's really taken down how much I adore this game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I did a Carmine mentioned in the chat about loving leveling up in Super Mario RPG. That kind of reminds me that I've done a couple low-level runs where I've gotten through the entire game with only doing fights that you can't avoid, which... as someone who played through the game a lot, is a hell of a way to play through this game, because it gets real, real hard as you get through the game.
Yeah, it can be very hard once you get really into the game and towards the later stages of the game. I remember, like, this last playthrough a few months ago when I was playing, it was very much a breeze to get through until, like, around Yardovich, which started to get really tough. It's, you know, it was in the sea.
I think that's kind of like
a turning point.
That's like the choke point in this game.
Yeah, that's after
Marymore and all that, which is kind of like not as challenging as it is ridiculous. And then I think like that underwater section is kind of a pain. And I think that if memory serves me correctly, Yardovich, actually I'm looking at his name right now. Is it Yarid? Dovich, like, because it's like Yari Dovic. I have no idea.
it's
just a lot of names that I pronounced when I was 10 and didn't know any better.
Yeah, same.
If memory serves me correctly, whatever the hell that boss's name, however it's pronounced, I think it kind of comes up at an inopportune time, and it's like the end of a long stretch.
Yeah, I think it's just finished. I think it's right after you beat Johnny.
Yeah.
And then you have to go and face him, and it's really tough. I mean, you really have to make sure you have Peach in your party, and you have to make sure you're healing constantly, especially for that battle. It's really tough.
Peach is like so crucial and OP in this game, especially if you get her in the Lazy Shell armor.
Yes. Because I think she's the old... Well, Mallow has HP Rain and some other healing.
Mallow can't do shit. what's your when you're playing this game and you're going through the last area, what's your team?
I always use I would say it's either Geno or Bowser, and it's always Mario and
it's gotta be Bowser. Peach. Mario, Bowser, Peach all the way.
That's I think that's the best group. I mean, Mallow's kind of like the lesser version of Peach, and then once you get Peach, there is no point to have Mallow in your party, in my opinion.
Don't use him.
And I feel like Bowser kind of replaces Geno as you get later in the game as well.
Yeah, Geno Whirl is always a great move to use. Yeah.
I always I recall with Geno, I would nail the timing with Bowser way better than with Geno's attacks.
Somebody brings up in the chat, is Mario RPG the first playable Bowser appearance?
I think so.
I think it is.
Unless you count Super Mario Kart.
Yeah.
That's true, Mario Kart, yeah. Super Mario Kart would be the first usage of Bowser. And you can play it directly. I mean, you also can use Bowser in gameplay and battling, but... I mean, just using Bowser by himself, I think Super Mario Kart is the first time you use
it. Yeah.
But yeah. I've always loved that aspect of the game with Bowser, and that, yeah, he still doesn't like Mario, but he'll join up with him because this threat. Yeah. You know, the most another interesting thing is you don't really interact with Smithy until, like, the very last part of the game.
Smithy's, I love this game. Smithy's this really such a disappointing boss because it's just like he's just there and he's just like this blob, and then it's like, that's not my real form. This is my real form, and it's just like you're like this robot thing that changes its head. Like they do a good job, I think, of like keeping him this threat. But then you see him and you're like, can I just fight the Axum Rangers again? That'd probably be cooler.
He looks like it's really not about Smithy, even though he is the overall boss of the game. It's more about the enemies you meet leading to Smithy. I've always thought Smithy never seemed like a great villain, like, you know, Kefka or, you know, other villains you see in RPG games. He's very much kind of just, well, yeah, he's the final boss, but there's plenty of other bosses before him that are more colorful and memorable.
I think the idea behind Smithy is more interesting than the character himself. I mean, the entire Smithy gang, or the evil group, is a series of manufactured weapons that are being mass-produced in this factory in another dimension. And he is like, he has the smelter, he is the Smithy who melds the metal and makes all the enemies. And then each of the bosses, there's like a sword, there's Boya, their bow, the Axum Rangers are all axes, and Yaradovic, whatever his name is a spear. It's an interesting concept. Holy shit. You didn't know this?
This just dawned on me 20 years later.
Yeah, he's
maybe,
like
maybe I need to give Smithy a little more credit.
He is the weaponsmith.
Yeah, maybe it's a little more clever. Apparently in the chat they're asking what our favorite weapons are.
I like the Hurley Glove. That's the one where Bowser throws Mario, right? That's
Hurley Glove is his baller. I also like the Chain Chomp. Especially the story of how Bowser gets the Chain Chomp is you just like he goes and talks to that Chain Chomp and then comes back and it's just that like we sorted things out and then just busts him out and starts spinning him around.
Yeah.
I mean the frying pan for Toadstool is delightful, especially that sound. It's just so rewarding. Lazy Shell is so destructive.
And that's the one where it's like you have to go into a town. I think it's Seaside Town. I'm not sure. But it's
fertilizer,
and you get the seed, and then it grows, and then you go up, and you get the weapon. And,
Yeah, it's in the Rose Town Gardener, and he like talks a mile a minute whenever you give him an item.
Yeah, that was funny. I always get those two mixed up. It's Rose Town, and then
they are very similar in the way similar. They're laid out and their looks. Yeah.
The Ribbit Stick has a good name.
Yeah, that is a good name.
I always like that. I'm just like picturing the animations that go with each weapon right now, and it's making me happy.
Some of my favorite moments are also just like ones that are very obscure. Like, do you remember when you would go into Nimbus Land and you slept at the inn, and sometimes you'd get like red essence and stuff like that? I mean, I'm just thinking of like some of the more obscure moments, because my favorite part about this game is, like, even to this day, there's a bunch of mini games and obstacles and things like that that aren't vital to the game, but are, like, nice little additions that kind of make the game stand out.
Yoster Isle, just, like, in its entirety. Yeah. All the stuff with Boshi, the races there. I like Jinx and Jagger with all, like, the stuff with Monster Town.
Mm-hmm. Monster Town's really cool fun. Town.
Yeah, and Culex, which, like, I mean, that was just a really fun Easter egg.
I've been through Culex once. What's the guide to getting him? I think it's something having to do with something in Mole Town.
You got to buy a firework from one of the moles in Mole Town and give it to a little girl who gives you a shiny stone that unlocks the door in Monster Town.
There you go. Okay.
and that's a battle, too. This isn't an optional battle, but we haven't mentioned Nimbus Land at all. With Valentina and Dodo, which is just like when Valentina, looking at that character model, like I'm gonna gonna bring it up right now just to look at it and marvel at the weirdness of like this like weird lady that has a bird on her head and like is always holding a martini.
I am surprised that, you know, Nintendo was really into censorship around that time, and I'm not sure how she got past Nintendo censors. Interesting. Considering the jiggles every time you hit her.
Yes.
apparently in Japanese, her name is basically Margarita.
That makes sense.
Okay. But and then all the stuff with Dodo, how it's just like people are just like, yep, this is Mallow. It's like, this is not a bird. This is a cloud guy. He's the prince. He wants to marry me. Like, it's all in somewhere. Like, that's a setup. That's like a setup that's probably in like a Final Fantasy game in the past where it's just like, oh no, like he's pretending to be this prince. He's going to ruin everything. And in this, it's like, it's a big dumb bird.
Yeah.
And like those weird stealth sections, like with Booster, when like you have to hide behind the curtains.
Yes.
I think there's one where you need to like outsmart Dodo as well.
Yeah, he's
stand on the podiums, and he would like try use his beak and
statue cleaning, as Donald's saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great part of the game, and that's also a really good place to level up. I'm just thinking like ways to level up, and yeah, you can just go over that whole castle over and over and level up. Yeah.
I want to call out of work and just play through this game all the way through again.
No.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even mentioned Frog Fuchsius.
Yeah. That's a pretty interesting twist in a game that, no, Mallow actually isn't a tadpole. I guess we can spoil that. He's not a tadpole and not a frog. So, yeah, it's very amazing that he is.
Todovsky.
Todovsky. Couldn't you get an item from him? If you get sort of the tadpoles in a way that plays a song,
I think so.
You get a membership to the juice bar, so you can like buy Kero Kero colas and stuff that are super cheap. Yeah, I liked that most of the mini games in the game are actually more hidden. You have to seek them out, and the side quests as well. I mean, there's some of them that are integrated into the main story, but to get the full experience of the game, it encourages exploration and retreading old levels and finding these places and these characters that often were once bosses or mini bosses. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I have a mini game here. This is going to get you something really neat. You should do this.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind is Monstro Town, when you have to look for, I think it's medals, and then I think it's medals. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. You get an accessory that's really helpful. It's like you come across three ghosts, and they hide something in three different areas, and you collect them all, and they give you an item.
Yeah, the three musty fears.
Yeah. That's nice play on words.
Apparently we are now $135 away from our goal of 4,000. We're at $3,865. So that's great.
Awesome.
And also people are mentioning how awful the mines are, which I'll agree to disagree there because I love the
mine minigame sucked.
Yeah, the mine minigame is something that's just like, it's not great, but it's like so, it's so ridiculous that I love it.
It kind of brings back Mode 7 memories, and it's kind of nice in that way. But anything else, I don't really get it. I mean, I remember playing through it during this latest gameplay run through, and it's like, what am I supposed to do here, actually? Because it's very long, and it's not really fun, but it's very Mode 70, so I guess in a way that's kind of a nice callback. But not much beyond that. The Midas River minigame is much more fun.
I think.
Yeah.
There's the 8-bit Mario Easter egg is also really fun.
Once again, in Booster's Tower.
Yeah.
Best location in the game.
Like, I think what I really want to see related to Super RPG is I want it to come out on a virtual console on the 3DS.
Yes.
Because I would play this game every day if that was the case.
Do you think that would be possible?
I think it's
kind of known as being this really big game. Even to this day, it's kind of hard to emulate, I would assume.
I mean, they emulated it on Wii U.
True, yeah. I always thought that's why they took forever to release it, but yeah. I mean, if they can do it on Wii U,
assuming it wouldn't be that much of a problem on new 3DS. That's kind of, yeah. So, there's a chance. I don't know. I don't want to bring up Nintendo's future plans because I'm sure it's been discussed on every radio show today. But yeah, I mean, we'll see.
As Donald's pointing out, there was a special chip used for Mario RPG, but Mega Man X2 and 3 both have chips, and they're on the new 3DS.
Yeah, I think Street Fighter Alpha 2 also might have a chip. I think that's already on the new 3DS. So,
I mean, it might require some work, and it's not out on the Japanese 3DS yet. But that would probably be the sign. If we see it show up there, then we know it's possible.
Yep, you can get this everywhere, though. I mean, you can get it on the Wii U. You can get it on the Wii if you still have a Wii. I mean, picking it up in stores, I think that'll run you like $30 or even higher. I guess it depends on the value or how lucky you can find it on eBay or at a game store that still sells retro video games. I still have my copy from like 20 years ago. So, I mean, I'm always lucky. I guess I'm lucky in that fact, but you can pretty much get it anywhere and it'll run fine.
Yeah.
So we've talked about bosses. We've talked about, I guess we can go more into about locations or favorite locations because there's a lot of different locations. I mean, one of them we haven't even brought up yet is Barrel Volcano, which I like a lot. It's
Tsar Dragon and Zombone.
Yes, the Tsar Dragon. that's another tough boss, I thought.
I have a feeling this night's just going to end with me like mainlining Super Mario RPG, like a street corner. Just being like, give me that Croco.
Yeah.
The Barrel Volcano is really cool.
The music, I think, is one of my favorite music parts of the game. That's a really cool theme. It really fits with the volcano kind of.
It is, and then it has the chase sequence with the Mario Underground music. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
You know, another part of the game that I liked was the last stretch from on the road to Bowser's Castle and inside Bowser's Castle, it's really long, and if you need to go back and restock items, it's like very hard to trek back through that. But the last part where you go through, I think there's like number of doors and there's a lot of puzzles and a lot of aspects of gameplay that are very different and very, I forget exactly how it works, but I know there's like number of doors you need to go through and there's like trivia questions and puzzles and things like that. I remember that being very fun too.
Yeah, I think you can get some of the characters' best weapons by going through the battle sequences there, I think. The Bowser's Drill Claw, Geno's, whatever it is.
Is it the hand cannon, or is it? No, it's a star gun.
Yeah, it's like star gun, yeah.
I like the, as far as other areas from Mario RPG that I like a lot, Star Hill, especially the weirdness of the different wishes that you can examine, and how like one of them is clearly Luigi.
Mm. And bringing up Luigi, he's not in this game.
He's the ringleader in the parade at the end.
That's always kind of the recurring story in Mario RPG games. I'm not in Mario and Luigi, obviously, but in Paper Mario and games like that, he's not seen too often. I know in Paper Mario, he's kind of more of a background character. I guess that's
like
kind of
in Thousand Year Door, I think, is the best use of Luigi in like a video game ever.
That's the one where he like writes letters to Mario, and he's like a supervillain, and he's kind of, not a supervillain, a superhero.
Yeah, it's basically like a weird parallel to Mario's entire adventure.
Very similar to what Mario's.
It's very, very inspired. Where it's just like it's like the same thing, but like this weird parallel.
Here's a question: what do you guys want from a direct sequel? I mean, we've brought up that there's the chances of there being a direct sequel aren't very good, but what do you guys want to see if there is one by any chance?
I think
more
you
of
could
that
use,
amazing soundtrack.
Yeah. Yoko Shimomura has been on the Mario & Luigi series. I mentioned this earlier as far as like what could possibly happen with it, and I think it'd be pretty good if like it was just like Mario and Luigi Legend of the Seven Stars or something like that, And it was just, it, you know, using that Mario and Luigi art style, because I think especially like the newer 3D one, I know people knock it, but I think it fits well for bringing those Super Mario RPG characters to life. And like, maybe it's just like Mario and Luigi wind up in this world where like there's this memory of Mario saving the day, but it's been years since he's been there and it's in ruins. So then you basically have to go through and get the 7 stars, and maybe Smithy comes back. Maybe Fawful is, oh God, I want this game right now. I'm just basically building, like, add everything that I like about Mario RPG games and put it into a game. But I think a direct sequel would be Mario has been gone from this weird world for 20 years, and he comes back and like everything's gone wrong.
Well, it's still like the Mushroom Kingdom world, isn't it?
We ain't seen none of this shit since 1996, well, man.
I guess. True.
Yeah,
it's like it's Crisis on Infinite Mario's. That's what this is.
Cool.
Yeah, it does have the Mushroom Kingdom. It has Princess Toadstool, and it has the Toads. Beyond that, the rest of the world is just completely bizarre world.
Yeah.
Like maybe you could work Wario into it. Have Wario meet Booster. That's like, have that be like not even a game. Just like release a video of Wario meeting Booster and what would happen.
I've always thought Booster was supposed to be Wario, but something happened and he wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know like the origin of that, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there might have been a time where they're like, did we make him Wario? And maybe like someone was like, ah, Wario will never take off.
Well, I mean, what I would like to see in a new Super Mario RPG game, I mean, aside from, you know, callbacks from the original, I mean, I'd like to see more creative bosses, more creative worlds, new characters that don't really, that are kind of different from other Mario games, that are kind of unique and different, and which Super Mario RPG does really well. I guess overall, I would just want to see something that's not entirely, you know, in the Mario universe. It's something a bit different than what you would see in normal Mario games, and that's what I would like to see the most. And you know, to keep the gameplay, because the gameplay is pretty much perfect. Maybe more variety of who you can play as, and just seeing it. Seeing old characters come back and see what they're up to. Plus, there's a familiar Mario world, but with different things. I guess that's what I'm saying.
More of that same strangeness. I mean, even though there are characters and enemies, there's piranha plants, there's shy guys, there's Goombas, and everything like that. Beyond that, it's so strange, and the characters that aren't specifically from the Mario universe are just so unexpected that in turn you never know what to actually expect when you progress through this game. And I want more of that strangeness, whereas coming back to the Mario and Luigi and the Paper Marios and everything like that, even though there are introducing new characters and everything like that, it does still have, oh, it's in Mario World, oh, there's still going to be this character, there's still going to be Bowser as the final boss, there's still going to be a giant pokey enemy, that sort of thing. I just want them to take homage from the Mario universe and just go wild with it and just add a whole bunch of unexpected strangeness again.
Yeah.
So I think we're wrapping up here. We have about 2 minutes left. I guess we can talk about our final thoughts of the game really quickly. I mean, for me, it's one of my favorite games of all time. It's very unique and different from other Mario games. Even to this day, it's very different, and that's what I like about it the most. It's very different than what you would normally see in a Mario RPG. It has a bunch of unique characters, and you know that's why I love the game to this day. It's very unique and different and very cool, and also, it's fun. So that's the most important thing. What are your guys' thoughts?
I love this game.
Yeah.
If I had to make a list of my favorite games of all time, Super Mario RPG would be like top three, if not number one. Like, that's how I feel about it. Like, I don't think it's the best game ever made, because it's having played it a little, like having played a chunk of it in the past couple of years. Like, there's some rough edges about this game, but as far as favorite games go, it's near the top of my list. Like, I love Super Mario RPG.
It's on the best Nintendo console in history. Out of my top five games of all time, four of them are SNES games.
Maybe the best RPG console in history. Yeah.
I would say so. And like, PlayStation maybe might have an edge. Well, no, it's close. But yeah, I would say Super Nintendo.
Oh, actually, yeah, James nailed my top three: Mario RPG, Mario Galaxy, Devil's Third. That sounds about right.
It's unique. That's a unique list.
I can tell you that is not my top three.
Before we go, I gotta ask: did you guys get the Super Suit?
Super Suit, is that the one?
The 100 Super Jump.
Yeah.
Prize?
I did that once. I never did that again.
I've done it legitimately once.
Yeah. No, that was when I was probably like 1998. One of the times I was replaying it with my good friend, we did it. Like, it took a long time, but we did it.
Hardest accomplishment in a Mario game, in my opinion.
I did not do it, but I was really close, and I never really got to do it. I really should do that someday, but I think we're at, I think it's 6 o'clock, so we are going to wrap this up, and we'll give it back to James, and he can get on to the next segment. I want to thank you guys for coming on and talking about Super Mario RPG. This was really fun and brings back a lot of good memories and a lot of things that to this day I probably should work on, like the Super Jump thing. I mean, I never really got to that. So.
Yeah, we should just do like a retrospective on Mario RPG every 6 months. That sounds good.
I'm down.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so
while you guys are planning your living history of Super Mario RPG, I'm going to have to go ahead and end this segment. I want to thank you all for doing it with us.
97%. Thanks for listening, guys. We're at 97% of donations.
We are almost there.
Donate.
Right. Bye, everybody.
All right. See you guys later.